Good evening and welcome everyone to the regular meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Board of Directors for August 2nd, 2022. And so with that, I call the meeting to order and move on to item two. And I would like to ask Vice President Ozahosky if he would be kind enough to lead us in the pledge.
Absolutely, President Martin, please stand, place your right hand over your heart and repeat with me.
Thank you, Vice President Ozahosky. We can now move on to our announcements for tonight. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the board using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. As a reminder to those who are presenting online, please mute all of your devices until you are ready to speak. Make sure you unmute when speaking and remute when you are done speaking. Please turn on your camera while presenting, then turn them off when your item is complete. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item three. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial star 9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, dial star 6 to unmute. We do have members of the public present, and I remind the public there are public comment cards. And I would ask that each member who would like to make a public comment, please return to the board secretary to help expedite the public comments. The procedure for tonight's meetings are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from board members. I will then ask for, once concluded rather, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for roll call votes. All directors are present for tonight's meeting in person, except Director Colley, who will be participating via Zoom at my request. Reminder to the board, please pick up your microphones by the base and not the neck. This has been the cause of some of the microphones not working, so please pick them up by the neck. Please do not pick them up by the neck if you want to move your microphone. We will now continue the meeting. We move on to item three, public comment. I do have four public comment cards, and I have one written public comment. So we will go in the order that we've received public comment cards. We only have one public comment, written public comment card for item three, general public comment, by Cody Amore. If you would please come to the podium and make your public comments, please.
Thank you. Hello, members of the board. My name is Cody Amore, and I'm a homeless resident in Newhall, and I'm running for city council. The issue of water shortages is currently the sixth most important issue to Santa Clarita residents. Half of our water comes from a 444-mile aqueduct, and Castaic Lake is at the tail end of that aqueduct. As a result of the current severe drought, Castaic Lake is only 34% at total capacity. That was like a month ago, I think, which is pretty terrifying. These conditions should merit like a state of local state of emergency, but I don't know if you have that authority. What frustrates me is your response to these shortages. Santa Clara Valley Water recycles 475 acre feet of water per year, which is only 0.6% of our yearly water usage. Then Santa Clarita Valley Water gives that recycled water to a golf course, which I don't understand that at all. So Santa Clarita Valley has a long-term plan to increase recycling to 10,000 acre feet per year, but that would only be 13% of our current water usage. To give everyone a sense, an idea of how much of a scale that is, LA City is planning on recycling 100% of their water by 2035. And they're doing that by building water reclamation plants. If this board truly cared about our water needs, then they would also promise to recycle 100% of our water by 2035, not just 13%. A water shortage can drastically alter our social, political, and economic landscapes very quickly. If you thought COVID was bad, wait until the government forces you to ration your water. As Henry Kissinger famously said, he who controls the food supply controls the people. The same principle applies to water. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. All right, we do have a public comment card from Mr. Petzold, who is in attendance tonight. Item 6.2, okay. So I'm a little confused, Steve. Do you want this written public comment read during item 3, or do you want to make your public comment at the item when the item comes up?
Well, I was hoping to speak during 6.2, the Central Park Expansion Plan.
6.2? Okay. Well, you've submitted a card that says 6.2, and I have a written public one we received by email. It says item 3.
Yeah, but I...
So would you like to do it when we cover the item?
I figured I could do a better job.
I can't tell. 6.2. Thank you, Mr. Petzl. All right. Are there any... Well, our board secretary's left us. I was going to ask, are there any public comments by online attendees, Madam Secretary?
There is not.
Thank you very much. We can move to item 4, approval of the agenda. One note, on the agenda, there is nothing to report on item 15, closed session. Item 16, closed session announcements. Therefore, these items have been removed from tonight's agenda. Are there any additions, changes, modifications to the agenda from members of the board? Seeing none, the agenda is hereby approved. We move on to item 5, approval of the consent calendar. You have a lengthy consent calendar tonight on 10 items on the consent calendar, but I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar. Director Cooper?
So move approval of the consent calendar.
Motion to approve. Do I have a second?
I second.
Second by Director Ford.
Second.
We have any public comment on the consent calendar, Madam Secretary?
We do not.
Are there any discussion or questions by members of the board? Director Armitage.
Thank you. I do have some questions. I don't want to pull the items, but I do have some questions. If I could just have those answered, would that be okay?
Okay. Well, okay. That's pretty much our normal process.
Yeah. And we do have a long, lengthy number of items on the consent calendar today. So I have questions on 3 of them. I'll try to go quickly. For item 5.3, I wanted to ask, first I wanted to comment that I thought it was fantastic that the project included the installation of 50 native trees in the project. So thank you for that. The questions I have are, it seems to be that the whole area is to be concreted in. And I'd like to know if it'd be possible to instead have permeable surface used instead of concrete, so that any rainwater we get, hopefully, knock on wood, can become groundwater and it doesn't just run off into the gutters. So that's one question. And then the other question was, I feel like I very much appreciate, because I keep asking to have the reference to the strategic plan objectives that each of these projects that come before us to vote on, and that's starting to be included in the reports, and I very much appreciate that. I always have the standing question in my mind too, when we contract out work, is why are we contracting these out? So that's kind of a standing question that I have. So if you could just answer that for this one as well, that'd be great. And then I want to say also that I appreciated that the comments that were provided by Caltrans and California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the responses that were made in the report to them. So thank you for those. So that's 5.3. 5.4. Do you want to just answer those first, Mr. Mayle, before I go to 5.4?
Yeah, I can do that. So on the in regards to the permeable pavers, we are moving into final design. We can take a look at that. We do have semi-trucks that will be going onto the site, and so there is a concern with stability on the site to make sure we can do the ion exchange. I know we looked at corners of the property that we may be able to drain to create that pocket, if you will, for recharge. And so we'll include that in consideration for final design. But we also have to consider the functionality of the site.
Great. Thank you.
And then the first question was the,
why is this being contracted out?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yeah, there's a lot of specialty inspection involved in a building a tank site like this. And although we are looking at alternatives to do in-house project management, and we will be bringing something to that to the board as needed as we move forward on that process, collecting the staff to be able to do that. We currently don't have enough staff to manage a project of this size. You have to assume that we are going to have somebody on site the entire time the construction is going on, making sure we're tracking the work that's done, the number of workers, so that we're managing the public funds correctly. And so in order to meet that need and to meet needs of all the other projects, we have to contract a project like this out.
Thank you. I appreciate the explanation. Okay, and then 5.4, I want to say thank you for explaining why the consultant services were necessary for this work. The questions I have related to that are, do we anticipate needing to contract this out beyond a year? Because it does specify for 1 year, I believe, in the document. And then who will own the raw data? Will it be GSI or will it be SCV Water? And so I'm concerned about that, because if we decide that we no longer want to work with GSI, I'm not saying we will, but if that were to happen and we switch to a different consulting group and then the data is attached to them and we no longer own the data, that would be an issue. So that's why that question popped in my mind. And then my last question related to 5.4 is, since the groundwater sustainability plan is really for the groundwater sustainability agency, the GSA, and the GSA also has other entities on it, are there plans to have the other entities also contribute funds toward this work, either now or in the future? And then I just have a couple questions related to one question related to 5.6, if you want to answer these questions first.
President Martin, if I may just answer these ones first.
Please, Steve, yes.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Director Armitage. The questions there, as far as the contract with the consultant, I do think you're going to see ongoing needs for consultants for the type of work that is being accomplished by the Groundwater Sustainability Agency. What we did was get a proposal for 1 year period. We'll revisit that again at the end of that period. And I would assume that we'll have another proposal or proposals that would come before both the GSA board and this board for consideration. The data will be public. It's being done by contract with a public agency, so it will be public data that will be available for use.
Okay.
As far as the funds, currently the other partners do contribute, but it is a what I would consider a smaller amount. It's $20,000 each. For their share of participating in the Groundwater Sustainability Agency. I will mention that the county, one of the county representatives at the last meeting brought up reconsideration of that. I don't think it was reconsideration going up as much as it was to go down, but the GSA board will be having a discussion regarding that at its next meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And then just a simple question related to 5.6 for the ratepayer advocate contract. For the scope of work, is Mr. Olowski's availability to the board and to ratepayers included? I didn't specifically see that stated in there, but I just wanted to make sure that that was part of what we're paying for.
Yes, it is. It's part of the original policy and part of the original contract.
Okay, thank you. That's it, thanks.
Thank you, Director Armitage. We did have one public comment card filled out for item 5.6. So at this time, I'd like to ask Ms. Noltemeyer if she would come to the podium to make her public comment on item 5.6.
Cam Noltemeyer. A Valencia ratepayer. I'll tell you that right out front. And that's why I look at things and I always find it interesting that we are separated out. And I really don't need those. And you are coming up with the ratepayer's advocate. I haven't seen one of those around. For years, we used to always have ratepayers advocates. And all I can say you, they aren't there for the ratepayers. At least none of them I ever saw. And so I don't know why we're falling back all of a sudden on these old-fashioned way of doing things. Your rates should be fair for everyone. But that's not the case. But I just can't understand why, like I said, I've been a ratepayer here since before the city was formed. And every time I hear a ratepayer advocate, I kind of laugh because I have yet to see anything changed by a ratepayer advocate, especially for someone like myself living in Valencia. Actually, we are segregated out there a lot of times. For special treatment, shall we say. And this is one ratepayer I've been watching for so many years. And when I saw ratepayer's advocate, I burst out laughing. And I don't know why all of a sudden you're falling back into the old ways very quickly like that. There's something wrong with what's going on. One thing, we have far too many people sitting up there. And that will be changing, hopefully, by the end, before the end of this year, in a couple months, so to speak. There's going to be an actual election. For the first time, we'll be able to elect who we want to be sitting up there. Now, I hope that isn't going to be drowned by some way along the way, but it shouldn't be, because that is the way it's supposed to be. And I'm a little worried because the main person that put that into effect died. And that's why I'm very concerned. But I'm going to pick it up every way possible to see that this agency will not go backwards.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer.
Thank you.
All right, we do have a motion and a second. We have no further public comments unless there's further board discussion. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Gutzeit.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Plambeck?
Yes.
Director Armitage?
Yes.
Director Ford?
Yes.
Vice President Ozohofsky?
Yes.
President Martin?
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that is resolution numbers SCV-291, SCV-292, SCV-293, SCV-294, SCV-295, and SCV-296.
Thank you, Board. Thank you, members of the public. We can now move on to item six, action items for approval. We do have three on the agenda for tonight. Item 6.1 is approve a resolution authorizing the purchase order for Hazen and Sawyer for planning services for the master plan project. Our presenter tonight is Jason Yim, unless Mr. Cole would like to make any opening remarks.
Just that as the engineering committee reviewed this item and got some good insight, it's a major planning effort for the agency. This will be the first master plan for the new agency. So a huge undertaking, and Jason will be able to walk you all through that tonight.
Thank you. Jason, it's all yours.
Thank you. Good evening, President Martin and members of the board. I am Jason Yim, principal engineer with the agency, and I'm presenting this item regarding the master plan. Next slide, please. So this slide probably looks very familiar to everyone there. It's our SCV Water Service Area and the Water Division areas for Newell Water, Santa Clarita Water, and Valencia Water. So as you know, SCV Water System consists of the three former retail water systems and the regional water system. This provides an opportunity to evaluate the overall valley-wide water system as a single water system versus four separate systems. Evaluation will be performed as part of SCV Water's first master plan, as Mr. Cole just mentioned. So basically, we would evaluate the overall valley-wide water storage needs, well supplies, booster stations, pressure regulating stations, and regional water turnout connections in the distribution system. Next slide, please. So this slide and the next few slides will actually show the various facilities in our system. As shown on this slide, we have approximately 100 water storage tanks located throughout the valley. And the master plan will evaluate the current and future water storage needs based on existing and future water demands for a combined water system. As a single water system, we now have the opportunity to take advantage of any unused storage, if any, in one area and apply it to an adjacent area as needed versus having separate independent systems that potentially would have required the construction of additional storage. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the water production wells in our system. The purple dots that you see there reflects the wells that provide water from the alluvium aquifer, and the blue dots show the wells that provide water from the Saugus aquifer. So there are about approximately 9 Saugus wells and 38 alluvium wells. And as you know, some of these wells are out of service due to PFAS, perchlorate, and or other reasons. And we are in the process of restoring some of those wells. So like earlier in the consent items, we had the final design for well 205. And you know, as you may know, we are wrapping up construction on our Valley Center well, and we are starting construction on our Santa Clara and Hondi wells. So the master plan will evaluate the water system hydraulics based on the current wells that are in service, the timing of when certain wells are anticipated to be back in service, and it'll evaluate where future wells may be constructed to improve the water system reliability. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the booster stations in our water system. The booster stations are typically used when we need to pump water to a higher water pressure zone. So there are approximately 62 booster stations in our system, and the master plan will evaluate the water system hydraulics with these booster stations to identify if there are any booster station improvements that may be needed. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the pressure regulating stations that are spread out throughout the system. So you can think of these kind of the opposite of the booster stations. So the majority of these pressure regulating stations are used when we need to provide water to a lower pressure zone. So these stations monitor and regulates the water pressure at the station location, and then it provides regulated water pressure as needed. So there are approximately 79 pressure regulating stations in our system. And the master plan will evaluate system hydraulics with these stations to identify if there's any improvements that we need for the pressure regulating stations. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the regional water turnout connections in our system. And basically, these turnouts provide water currently from our two surface water treatment plants, the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant, which where you folks are now, and our Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant, along with the water from the Saugus Perchlorate Treatment Facility. So there are 26 turnouts in our system, and the master plan is going to evaluate the hydraulics with these turnouts to identify if there's any improvements that may be needed to help improve our distribution system. So also, too, although not shown on this slide or the previous slides, since, you know, we have several, you know, miles, 904 approximately miles of pipelines, the master plan will also take a look at pipelines as well. So we'll evaluate the pipeline risk based on likelihood of failure and consequence of failure, and then it'll be able to identify what the risk is and help prioritize and help establish our overall pipeline inspection, rehabilitation, and replacement programs. Next slide, please. So to prepare the master plan, staff has issued a request for proposal to our on-call consultants on planning bids on March 1st, and we have received 5 proposals on April 27th. The team to evaluate the proposals included staff from all the departments in the agency. So this is a very collectively combined effort throughout the agency. We had several engineers from the engineering department, the GIS manager from the administration department, principal water resources planner, and the data scientists from water resources, and the director of operations and maintenance as part of the evaluation team. So when they took a look at the proposals after the initial evaluation, 2 firms were selected for interviews in late May. And Hazen and Sawyer was selected based on the following criteria: responsiveness, project understanding, responsibility, scope of work, and schedule. So this work will also help us meet SCB Water's objective and strategic plan to plan, design, build facilities to meet demand, including storage capacity and interconnections between regional and retail water systems, and to plan and budget for long-term replacements and improvements. Next slide, please. So the scope of work for this master plan includes the various items that you see there that will be performed on a time and material basis. We'll have several project meetings and workshops with the consultant and various staff. There'll be considerable data collection and review of the record drawings for the various water facilities, along with operational data. The work also includes updating and calibrating the water system hydraulic model and hydraulic model training so that our staff can continue the water modeling efforts after the work is done. The master plan will also evaluate the various water facilities, and as I mentioned earlier, determine pipeline risks and identify capital improvement projects that are needed now and in the future. So the evaluation and findings will be documented in a master plan report. And to prevent the evaluation and findings from just sitting in a report on the shelf, the work also includes the creation of dashboards that will provide a visual format of the findings and allow facility updates to be reflected as projects are completed. So there are several benefits to providing these scope items and preparing this master plan. Some of the benefits include, you know, having a proactive roadmap to manage our infrastructure assets. You know, we'll identify what we have, where we are deficient in water storage, pumping needs, et cetera, and where our pipeline risks are and what facility improvements we need to provide for a reliable water system. Next slide, please. So this item was presented at the July 7th Engineering and Operations Committee. And if this item is approved tonight, then the work can start this month in August and is anticipated to be completed by March 2024. Next slide, please. So the recommendation for this item is the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors adopt the resolution authorizing the General Manager to execute a purchase order for planning services with Hazen and Sawyer for an amount not to exceed $1,525,000. So this concludes my presentation. I'll turn it back to you, President Martin.
Thank you for the presentation, Jason. Excellent as usual. Before we open up to board discussion, we do have one public comment card. Ms. Noltemeyer, would you like to come to the podium and make your public comment?
You're doing a master plan. Can you tell me which number you're on right now? 6.1. Approve a resolution authorizing purchase order for planning services for the master plan project. I did have that, but I lost it because I was rushing over here tonight. But it's like a million. Can you tell me the amount you're paying? It's a million something for this master plan. Isn't that correct? Over $1 million at this point in the life of this water company to pay $1 million for a master plan. It to me is just hilarious. Where have you been all these other years? You have this huge, huge members here. It's just growing and it's growing and it's growing. Every time we look, there was a couple more added. You don't need that. And now this. It's ridiculous. And why don't you just tell the public now how much you're paying for this? Surely you all know you're going to vote on it. Come on, someone volunteer. Could the chair please announce how much it's going to cost?
All that information was in the presentation, Ms. Noltmeyer. Please continue with your public comment.
$1.5 million. I'm sorry. It's what? Has it ever been done before?
This is the first master plan for the new SCV water and the consolidated water systems of the SCV.
So it's taken this long for you to come up with a master plan. And you have just a couple months and there will be an election. And this unit here that you have, this huge complex, is going to be reduced down, required by law. And once that law takes effect, there's something else that goes with it. You're elected, right? People have to vote for you. They can also recall you. Think about that when you vote. And I wonder how long, how many of you will last under that criteria. Again, I'm waiting to really get the ideas of anything happening productive from this agency, because it's too big, it's too complex. You don't seem to know.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer. Your time is up.
Thank you.
We have another public comment card from Cody Amore. Please come to the podium, Mr. Amore.
Thank you. I just want to echo some of those comments. I was surprised that, you know, that was a great presentation. The concept of centralizing our water systems is a good idea. But yeah, just at the very, very end of that presentation, there was just this like one line at the very end that just said, and you know, we're not going to exceed $1.5 million. And I'm curious as to what that money's going towards. That's all I just want to say.
Thank you, Mr. Amore. Are there any other public comments online, Madam Secretary?
There is not.
All right, we can now open it up to board discussion and questions. Left, looking right. Any Director Armitage?
Thank you. I agree. I think the idea of a master plan is good, especially for an agency that is recently consolidated. So I am supportive of the idea. I think the questions that we're hearing are valid. Like the questions that I came up with are also in addition to my standing question for any contracted work as far as why is this being contracted out. But this is a very large expense. So I was also very curious to know how that figure was calculated. How are we able to know that the cost estimates are appropriate for the proposed work? Because I didn't see anything in the memo to show us what the costs are going to be for. And if you could also maybe talk about the return on investment. So if we are going to spend this money, what are we getting for it and what potential savings down the road will we be seeing? So I would actually like to see a document with a breakdown of the costs rather than just a 1.5 million figure being put in front of us with no explanation. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Would you like a response to that?
Sure.
I'll turn it over to Courtney. I know pretty much how this is done, but go ahead, Courtney, go ahead and respond to Director Armitage.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. The cost analysis is provided in the proposal. They have a full breakdown of each meeting, amount of time for those meetings, each amount of time for each individual tasks. We have, I do believe it was close to a 100-page RFP listing in detail all of the tasks. This is a monumental type of project. It's not simply an understanding of what our where our facilities are, because we could do that level of analysis. What we actually need them to do is go into the field and flow the hydrants and check that to our model and calibrate that model. That's part of it, a big task of that. And then once you have that data and you have a calibrated hydraulic model, then you can start to look for efficiencies, start to look for where we can merge zones and combine our storage for similar elevation. And what are the impediments of doing that? Do we need to upsize pipes? Does that impact our pumping scenarios? Does that impact how our wells are configured, our transport water across our system? So there are a lot of different tasks involved in that, but we certainly have reviewed the breakdown of those tasks and they reviewed the number of hours anticipated. So that is part of our analysis in reviewing the proposals. We reviewed all five proposals on those criteria. And although these are not a cost-based proposal, it is important for us to understand that we are getting value for the consultants that we are hiring and that we are getting a number of hours that we would expect in this type of project. We estimated this cost. It is in line with what other master plans have cost. Typically, previously, these agencies have been done a much smaller master plan on a much smaller level, and they still come out to be $500,000 or $600,000 or $700,000. Obviously, we're doing four times that amount or more taking it this analysis. So we really feel like this is a comparable cost. All of the proposals actually had very comparable costs to this. I believe that we are going to get a good value from this, hopefully in not only being able to identify the most critical path projects through the consequence of failure and risk of failure analysis, so that we know where our money needs to go first and most urgently, but also it will give us an analysis of whether or not we need to spend that money on tank expansion or pump station expansion. And if there's other ways we can utilize that money to improve the system without that large expense.
You're okay? Is that adequate? Okay, very good. Director Planbeck.
Yeah, well, I can suggest one place it needs to go to the 14-inch PVC pipes replacements. Yeah. But I didn't see in the list, and maybe I missed it, that you're going to go back and analyze data from our historical water agencies, because I know New Hope County Water District had quite a lot of data about when they have to update things. And I mean, I assume that that was included, and that's what some of the stuff that they're going to be doing.
It is, yes. One of the items we gave them, not only to review and come up with a cost, but also for future use as they move forward, is all prior agency master plans, mm-hmm. including urban water management plan or any other documents we have, which will give them planning level analysis and historical information.
Right. Any other comments or questions? Director Cooper.
This was reviewed at the Planning and Engineering Committee in detail. And Hayes and Sawyer is a well-known firm for doing this kind of work. This will improve efficiencies in the system. And with that, I would move staff recommendations.
I will second it, Director Gutzeit.
Director Gutzeit second. Motion by Director Cooper. Before we go on, I just would like to make a comment. In Jason's presentation, you saw, I think, four or five slides, each with an individual category of components. You can imagine merging all those components, all your booster pumps, all your wells, all your turnouts, all your pressure reducing valves, all the various components that he demonstrated into one map. That gives you some idea of the complexity of our overall water system. And this is a professional services agreement. Professional services are done by professionals, registered engineers and hydrologists, and a lot of scientists that work on this, computer technicians. This is expensive work, but it's important work, and it'll provide the information on our overall system performance that we need. My guess is the cost of this service as a percentage of the value of that of our overall infrastructure is a tiny percentage. And it's an investment that Engineering and Operations Committee, as Director Cooper mentioned, received a report on and made a, I believe it was a unanimous recommendation to move forward. And with that, unless there's further questions or comments, Madam Secretary,
Gary, we have
Director Gutzeit.
Yeah, I had just a squeak more than my second on this. I wanted to say that this is a very exciting project. I know we did master planning at Newhall, and it did prove to do exactly what you said about allowing us to find efficiencies and evaluate, you know, whether tanks needed to be replaced or whether they could be operated differently, more efficiently, even with an eye towards energy savings. I did have one question. Did all of the agencies have master plans available, or are some starting from scratch?
I believe we had master plans for three of the available agencies, and one was starting from scratch.
Okay, so there is.
But we did have a hydraulic model for that system, and we're able to do our own some analysis in that section too.
Okay, but some is starting from scratch too. So, you know, and I also think that the timeline is actually pretty aggressive for the volume of work that needs to be done. So I personally feel we're getting a good value for this. And I know it's time and materials, and I know that we will watch them closely. That's all.
Very good. Thank you. One more comment before we go ahead for the roll call on the vote is thank you very much to the staff for the effort you put forth to assemble the proposals, evaluate the proposal, and make a decision. It's a tough call on your part, I'm sure, but I do believe you've selected a very qualified and very capable firm to do the work. And with that, Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Blambeck.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
No, but let me qualify that by saying that I don't disagree that this is important. I just would have liked more information presented in written format for consideration before the meeting. Thank you.
Director Cawley.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Gutzeit.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Vice President Osohowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that's resolution number SCV-297.
Thank you, Board. Thank you, staff, for the presentation and the supplemental information that you were providing. And with that, we can move to item 6.2, which is approval resolution to execute an amendment number 4 to the ground lease by and between the City of Santa Clarita and SCV Water relative to Central Park. And our presenter tonight is Christina Jacob. Ms. Jacob, if you're there, proceed with your presentation.
Yes, thank you. Good evening, President Martin and members of the board. My name is Christina Jacob, right-of-way agent here at SCV Water. Tonight, we bring before you this item to execute the fourth amendment to the lease with the City of Santa Clarita for Central Park. Next slide, please. Central Park is located near the intersection of Bokeh Canyon and Alamogordo Road on the SDV Water property known as Rio Vista. Aside from the orange shaded parcel in this map, SDV Water owns the parcel you see here outlined in red. Central Park, shaded in green, has been leased to the City of Santa Clarita since 1997. This original lease is attached in your packets as Exhibit B1. There have been three additional amendments attached in your packets as Exhibits B2, B3, and B4, respectively. This evening, we will be going through the proposed fourth amendment to this lease, which is attached in your packets as Exhibit B5. The summary of how all of the amendments, including this fourth amendment, we'll be discussing tonight, and how they update the original lease is attached as Exhibit B in your packets. Next slide, please. Here are the key terms of the fourth amendment, which we have worked closely with the city and our legal counsel of Best, Best, and Krieger to draft. Recital D identifies Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency as the successor in interest. Section 1.01 proposes the expansion of the lease area for the disc golf course and the city yard. You will see a map of these two areas in the next slide. Section 1.03 specifies that the annual meeting is set forth now per amendment number 4. This meeting is between the city and SCB Water. Section 2.01 extends the term to January 1st, 2038. Section 4.03, Section M, Section 2, takes into account the future commercial activities of concessions. The city has not recently had concessions, but this takes that activity into account for the future. Language was also added per the Engineering and Operations Committee last month discussion that commercial activities must be ancillary to community activities relating to permitted uses under the lease. Section 4.03, Section O, amends the 2010 trail license, which is attached in your packets as Exhibit B6, to add the cross-country trails. This section also references a future bike trail project, which will be a separate license agreement in the future. This section also adds language that the city will complete their appropriate CEQA review. Section 6.02 provides that the city is to give notification for maintenance of existing improvements. Language was also updated per the Engineering and Operations Committee discussion to remove the provision that the agency shall not unreasonably withhold its approval. In Section 11.03, SCB Water and the city are in agreement that the city is not permitted to erect additional memorials and commemorative signage outside of what is already existing. Next slide, please. As part of the Fourth Amendment, the city is proposing to expand the lease area in two sections. The green outline in this map is the current lease boundary, and the red dotted line is the proposed expansion. We will see these areas in zoomed detail in the next two slides. Next slide, please. Expansion Area 1 includes the proposed lease expansion for the disc golf course. The green outline is the current boundary. The blue dashed outline is the current fencing, and the red dashed line is the proposed lease area expansion and proposed new fencing. One of the questions from the Engineering and Operation Committee was if any trees would be cut down for this area. We were able to reach out to the city to confirm that no trees will be cut down for this disc golf course. Next slide, please. Expansion Area 2 includes expanding the city yard area. The city currently uses the area within the green boundary for offices, storage, and parking. They have proposed to expand the lease area from the current green boundary line to the area outlined by the red dashed line. Next slide, please. In addition to this Fourth Amendment, the city is proposing to build an exercise staircase on the south side of the park. As this staircase, you can see in this map, is in the black and white dashed line. It's not part of the original expansion project area. So SCB Water has proposed to enter into a license agreement. This is a license agreement because this is outside of the park lease area, which you can see as the green boundary line, and falls within the general manager authority to execute, but is in the amendment as an exhibit so that it is concurrent with the Fourth Amendment. SCB Water has included language from JPIA, insurance for the agency, for the appropriate indemnity and insurance language. Next slide, please. Also, as part of this Fourth Amendment, SCB Water is proposing to add the cross-country trails to the trail license of 2010, which is attached in your packets as Exhibit B6. This basically allows the additional trails as permitted use and ensures that the license and the lease coordinate the terms so that one term won't expire before the other. This license amendment also falls within the general manager authority to execute, but is in the amendment also as an exhibit so that it is concurrent with this Fourth Amendment. As with the previous license agreement, SCB Water has worked with language from JPIA for the appropriate indemnity and insurance language. Next slide, please. Staff recommends that the Board of Directors find that the proposed project is categorically exempt from CEQA under the state CEQA guidelines sections 15061 section B3 and 15301. Find that the exceptions to the categorical exemption contained in state CEQA guidelines section 15300.2 are inapplicable to this proposed project. Approve the resolution to execute amendment number 4 to the ground lease by and between the City of Santa Clarita and SCB Water as it relates to Central Park, and direct staff to file a notice of exemption within 5 working days of approval. We also have Joe Byrne, legal counsel to the agency from Best and Krieger, available for questions. But at this time, I would like to address a couple other questions that came up in the Engineering and Operations Committee meeting. One of the questions was regarding the circulation element of the Santa Clarita Parkway. And this Fourth Amendment does not affect that area. And another question was about a memorial bench. We were able to reach out to the city and learn that the city has received a request and they are discussing with the requestor. But under this Fourth Amendment, any memorial activity would not be allowed. And with that, I give this back to you, President Martin.
Thank you for the presentation, Christina. Thank you to the staff and all the work you've put in to get to this point. We do have one written public comment from Mr. Petzl. So if Mr. Petzl, you'd like to come to the podium and make your public comment.
Yes, President Martin. I was a little bit thrown off by the memorial section of the presentation that was just given. Certainly the Grove area where they have the names of young people that have killed in car accidents, to my knowledge, that's almost completely filled up. So I don't know whether what you're approving here would allow for expansion of that area or a new area, or whether no new names will be allowed to be added to that area. So without throwing a monkey wrench in this deal, I think that that's important to consider and to clarify with the city before you move forward. That having been said, in regards to the disc golf area, I'm in support of you approving this item 6.2 tonight. I'm a little bit thrown off by the map in that I wasn't able to fully understand the area. I understand the red dots, but the rest of it, to me, geographically, there's an area on the west side that has erosion. And my understanding was that that area was going to be covered up to allow safe use of that area. That is behind the fence. So there's a long ditch along the west area, and then it slopes up from there. But to my way of looking at the map here in the presentation, it looks like it's sloping to the east rather than to the west. So that might be some kind of anomaly. But certainly what I want to see is the area expanded. I certainly believe that what you've done here, or what the city has proposed, is appropriate, and I find myself in support of it. So I would like you to clarify regarding the memorials. If you go down to Huntington Beach, just for example, if you go out on the pier, there are a number of benches. Every bench on that pier is memorialized to somebody in the city of Huntington Beach. If there's anything lacking at Santa Clarita in Central Park, it's adequate spaces for people to sit and rest. So I don't understand what the problem, a bench that is memorialized to in memory of, might pose. And I understand you're considering, you know, a bench here, but there, it is appropriate, I feel, for various people to maybe fund a bench for people that care about somebody that enjoyed the park. And it's not, I'm not distracted when I go to Huntington Beach by sitting on a bench that was, you know, memorialized. So I think maybe that area needs some clarification with the city, but I ask you to go ahead and approve 6.2 tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Petzl. Mr. Cole, or you and Christina, would either like to respond to Mr. Petzl's comment? Because I wasn't understanding that that was what we're talking about as far as new memorial and signage.
Christina, would you like to respond? I know you were close to this, much closer than I was. So,
sure. So the question of the memorial bench was posed during our engineering and operations committee and meeting. And that was something that we had not heard about. So that was why we reached out to the city regarding that. And we know that the city received the request and they're discussing it with the requestor, but under this Fourth Amendment, we do have that section that identifies no memorials or signage.
Director Kelly, go ahead. Thank you, Christina.
Could you possibly expand a little bit more on Mr. Petzl's question about expanding the existing memorials?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and speak to that if that's okay. The existing memorial for the children in Central Park can continue to be utilized as it is been utilized if there is any more room. As Mr. Petzl pointed out, the room is limited there. This agreement would not allow the expansion of that area without reconsideration of an agreement with the city. So it would require a reworking of the amendment. Currently, per this amendment, no additional memorials will be allowed. No expansion of the existing memorial areas will be allowed.
That answer your question, Director Kelly?
It does. Of course, it makes us subject to a future amendment again. But at the same time, I'm wondering if there was a couple words or sentences that might explain something a little bit more about no expansion. Something that could be added to what we have existing now.
And what further clarification are you looking for, Director Kelly?
Well, he stated that it can't be expanded now, but it could be expanded through an amendment. How many times is the water agency going to be thrown under the bus to do extensions?
Yeah, I hear you. Courtney, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, we are putting this in with a joint effort with the city. It is both of our intentions to not expand any memorials in the park. The park is for a public use area for the benefit of the public for use for recreation. So it is not designed to become a memorial park. That was not the intent. And so the focus of the park is to focus on that recreation. This is an agreement with both the city and the agency. We don't anticipate any additional amendments coming forward, but obviously they can present additional amendments or come forward to staff, and we would bring that before the board if they were to do that.
I'll accept his answer. Thank you.
All right. I understand, Director Colley, which I can't tell. You have a comment or question, Director Colley?
Yes, thank you. First, I think that Mr. Petzl has brought up some very good points. I think it would be taken care of rather simply by simply saying something in there that that any new memorial would not be allowed unless approved by the water agency, rather than simply saying it, they're not going to be there at all. I believe the existing language has something along those lines. It allows us essentially a veto power. And so I would suggest that we make some minor amendment to allow in the agreement that possibility. And then I had a question on the yard, the expansion of the yard. And Christina, I thank you for the unbelievable amount of data that was provided with the board packet. I don't think I've ever felt like I got too much data before in the last 20 years. Today, I think I got more data than I wanted. But is there any language in there that restricts the city from using that yard for purposes other than things which directly service the park? I just wouldn't really want to provide a general use yard for the city in the middle of the park that we've essentially donated the land to the city. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Colley.
President Martin, this is Joe. I could chime in quickly on the last question. Yeah, there is.
Mr. Byrne.
Yeah, good evening, everybody. Yeah.
I see you.
There is a general requirement that all uses within the park be related to the purpose of the park, which is recreation, et cetera. So right now there is existing, they'd be prohibited from doing something that is unrelated to the provision of the park services, to answer Director Kyle's question.
And that's addressing new memorials, is that right?
No, that's addressing the question of whether the additional space that Director Colley was referring to that is being added to the lease area could be used for something that's not related to the park purposes. And the answer is no.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you.
Director Planbeck, go ahead.
Yeah. I just feel like it's too bad that a memorial bench is included as a memorial. I mean, they need benches over there, and this is a way for the city to not have to pay for the benches. So I just think that maybe is going a little bit too far. I understand how you don't want some of the other, I understand how it gets to be sort of taken over by memorials rather than recreation, but a bench is partly for recreation, so I don't really understand that one.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. I'll start with positive. I am very excited about further supporting outdoor activities and sports for communities' families with the expanded disc golf course and the cross-country tracks and the addition of the bike trail and exercise staircase. So I'm excited about that. I do agree with some of these comments being made. Although I understand the reason that some people wanted this language added because of the highly emotional and contentious debate that happened a year or two ago related to the obelisks. But I'm not sure that even the community as a whole, as Mr. Petzl mentioned, would want that strict of a policy going forward. As mentioned, the Youth Grove, there's a memorial and a ceremony that happens there every year. Sadly, it does grow as names get added to that every year as our youth are involved in motor vehicle accidents. So I'd hate to create a barrier to having that area have additions if families so want that. And I agree. I mean, I don't know that having memorial benches in the park is a bad idea going forward either. So I would also like to see a little bit more flexibility added back into that. And then one question, throughout the document in the contract, there was a reference to a person by the name of Aaron Chesbrough. Who is that? Trying to figure that out. Farmer. So is his name no longer relevant in the contracting? Was that just kind of a historical reference? Okay, so he doesn't have family that has claim to any of his, to, it's not there. Okay, thank you.
Director Butsek.
Just a quick question on security. I know after 9/11, there were concerns, and we still probably have reporting requirements for security. Are all of these areas, including the staircase and the trails, which I know can be pretty remote, are they fenced off or otherwise separated from the operational facilities? That's a question. And then just a comment. I mean, I think we should move this forward tonight. And if there is, the city wishes to come with memorial amendments at that time. I mean, my understanding is this is approved by the city and the water agency at this point. So I don't want to like continue the back and forth. If there's a burning desire to amend in the future for memorial, we can, but they've agreed to it. We seem to have agreed to this language preliminarily. So it's fine with me for now on the memorial side. And I would like to know about security though.
Yes, thank you for the.
Oh, did you want, pardon? Hold on, Director Kelly. Go ahead, Christina.
So just to speak to the question regarding security. So our facilities are fenced off. So the Rio Vista, the treatment area, and then our water tanks are fenced off from where the staircase and the trails are.
I'd actually like to expand on that a little bit, if I may. The one of the benefits of moving forward on the disc golf portion of the course is the city will also put into their budget to redo that fencing. Currently, a lot of that fences is crumbling on top or sloping from either just age or people climbing on top of it. So we're going to have a taller fence with a top bar that'll be more supportive of even the access road coming up to this site.
Thank you. I would like to move the recommended action.
Okay. I'll have a motion, but Director Kelly, you had something to say, and then we'll go to Director Cooper.
I have a few questions that are spread all over my notebook, so I'll try to find some type of order. But is there an explanation on why the road would go from 25 feet to 36 feet? I wasn't able to read something with regards to that. Also, with regards to the height of the 100 feet, I'm assuming that 100 feet actually is because of the baseball lights. But in reading it, it doesn't seem to stop them from expanding the height of any of their other buildings to 100 feet. And I would be a little concerned about that just in reading the lease as it is. We may or may not have a approval or denial of that, but it just concerns me that it's not in the lease. Once upon a time, a while ago, we were going to be moving our security and our kiosks up the road a little bit, and we were going to be building a truck turnaround. That hasn't happened. I don't know if it's been totally scrapped, but I'm wondering if the expansion of the disc course that's going close to the road would have any effect on future expansion if we were to do a turnabout. I don't know if you want me to wait for some answers or if you want me to keep going. I've got about six more things.
Courtney, did you get all of Director Kelly's questions?
I'm writing them down as we go. I can answer them now if you want me to answer
yes,
those.
Go ahead. Yes.
I'm not positive that the road expansion or the height are part of Amendment 4. And maybe I'll have Christina clarify, but I think that was part of previous amendments, probably to put in the lights, as you said.
It was previous amendment.
And so we hadn't really looked into those, so I hadn't really considered that, just making note of that. As far as the future expansion or future road turnaround, we did look at that plan set and made sure that any modifications we have here wouldn't have impacted the proposed turnaround. Most likely that proposed turnaround would not work right now. We would have to modify it further if we did decide to go forward with that, but still should not be impacted with the revisions to the disc golf. At no point were we coming further south down the slope. We were always pushing further to the north and west to create that turnaround.
And the 25 feet versus 36 feet?
That's also before a prior amendment. I don't know in this amendment four that had anything to do with that width of the expanded road.
And is the expansion or the extension of the lease for 15 years, is that an arbitrary number, or is that something to do with their previous grant?
I actually don't know that. I don't know if Joe is able to answer that or understand that question.
I can. So that was a number that was agreed by both the city and the water agency, and consistent with the previous terms.
All right, and I just wanted to make sure it seems to be self-explanatory, but things always get out of hand. The future bike trail is non-motorized, guaranteed to be non-motorized. We're not going to have any off-road bicycles, motorcycles, whatever on that.
It will be a class one bike trail, which has specific uses, and it is for non-motorized uses.
If you want me to use it, it has to be a class zero. All right, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Director Kelly. Director Cooper.
Now, just a little bit on the memorial thing. You know, after what we went through with the obelisks and the issues down there, I think we knew that when we came back with this lease and we put in the lease, no memorials, it really doesn't mean that. It just means that if something happens and the people go to the city and the city says, well, I'm sorry, it's the lease, that they don't allow it. That just means they come here to us in looking at us to allow it. So it really doesn't change anything. It's something that we can always change down the road with the city if they want to put in benches rather than buying them themselves and do that. You know, if they ask us, it's not a big deal, but I think it's what the idea is we don't want any new memorials down there. And if the Kids Grove needs to be added on to, there's a lot of ways to do it rather than just continuing to put up more of the stumps. We can do it just like we did at Veterans Park, and you put up a separate memorial for some of it down there. But I'm sure that's going to continue to keep growing, unfortunately. But they're going to come to us to have these things fixed. So I think the lease is fine. It just means that we'll just have to work with the city, and the city's been very good for the last 25 years in working with them with this. So I don't see any problems with it in the future. And I seconded Director Gutzeit's
very good motion. And this is a motion with no changes to the lease as submitted. Okay. And the second is also applied. So I want to, before we go on with the discussion about memorial, I want to ask a question. As I recall, when we went through the discussion, when we were considering the signage and the obelisks, and one of the key points in the lease was if it's park related, then staff has the staff, unless there's some problem with it, it's accepted as park related item, and it's the city's prerogative to add something that's park related. And it certainly seems to me that a bench would be park related, even if it has a memorial plate or logo or some sort of demarcation on it that indicates it's in memoriam of some event or some person or some family, that would be a park related item. Is that your interpretation? Perhaps Joe can weigh in or Steve can weigh in. I'm not sure whether we have to make any changes to allow future benches that might have a memorial indication on it.
Joe, do you want to give that a first go?
Sure. Yeah, I see Matt has his hand up. I know he's been involved in the discussions, so I'll defer to the general manager.
Thanks. Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, having heard what I think is the preponderance of comments and understanding that as we embarked on this lease discussion with the city, we unfortunately were not made aware of the bench issue, which would have been probably helpful, as we could have incorporated something into the draft agreement to cover that. But since it did arise, and we're aware that there's at least one active proposal for a member of the community, and could be other considerations. You know, one thought I have is that there are many examples of public or quasi-public places that do allow the affixing of a memorial plaque, or really more of a plate, on a bench. And perhaps we just would, if we want to have the flexibility without having to come back and do an entire amendment, we might want to just have something included in the exception language to the satisfaction of the board tonight, which would acknowledge that the city may affix memorial plaque. I want to come up with a word that implies something that's not, you know, a large thing. But two benches, or to have a bench dedication program that's satisfactory, you know, to the agency at the general manager level, unless you want to get involved in reviewing the program, in which case I would be happy to let you do that. But I think we know what we're talking about. I think we've seen them around at different places. You know, I certainly have seen them at in Library Gardens, Descanso, Pageant of the Masters down in Laguna Beach. You know, they have fixed just saying that this bench or the seat is an in memoriam for a particular person, and usually it's in conjunction with some kind of sponsor or fundraising.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Director Kelly, did you have something to add to this?
Just a quick note. I think that the general manager is on target, and the city had a policy of not hanging up banners with soldiers' names on it and decedents' names on it that were killed in action. And they turned around and they then made it an item that could be sold, and the homeowners could keep it. And so if the city comes back with something like what you're referring to, which I agree with you, Mr. President, you know, that's something that might be well valued, and the city would probably be the person to go out there and say, if you want to sponsor that bench, you pay for the plaque, you do this, you do that. And then we wouldn't be involved from that standpoint. But also, Director Bronstein had her hand up. I wasn't sure if you saw that.
Again, question back to Mr. Stone, Mr. Cole, Mr. Byrne, Mr. Bond, if necessary. Does the language as written in the current in the proposed amendment allow a new bench to be installed as a park related item without any approval of the water agency, even if it has some sort of a memorial plaque assigned to it?
I think this is Joe, President Martin. I think it would be, if that is the desire of the board, it'd be a better idea to just clarify that, consistent with what General Manager Stone has said, because it's not entirely clear, and a strict reading of it would potentially support it being prohibited.
Okay, so Mr. Stone's proposal is that as an exception.
Yeah, and that would be something that would be easy to draft if the board would like. It just could be an exception for a plaque of a size approved by the general manager, and with overall approval at the general manager level.
Okay, and as Director Cooper said, if there's a desire for some new memorial facility, then that's outside of this lease agreement. It would come back again from the city and the water agency discussions and come before the board for approval.
Correct. So,
Director Gutzeit, would you like
to? I wanted to see, and maybe just to move this along, we can come up with something where we could have a dimension that would be acceptable. Certainly the benches are small enough. I would hate to, if we're trying to accomplish exceptions, you know, there's tiles on the paver stones and things like that that could be done that are also small. I feel like we are trying to solve something that, you know, might be coming to the city, but maybe they have other ideas for a more comprehensive solution. My preference would be to wait, but if we want to, if the majority of the board wants to amend it tonight, I might suggest, you know, anything that's a flat plaque less than 6 inches by 12 on a fixture might be a more general language than a bench specifically, because they might do pavers, they might do a wall. I don't know. I'd rather not, but if everybody wants an amendment, that would be my initial suggestion.
Director Bernstein.
So first of all, thank you, Christina Jacobs. It was so much information, as Director Colley said, it was really great. I will tell you that I agree with everything except for that last amendment. I probably feel differently than a lot of you here about what happened about the memorial, and I respect that. I personally do not want to be a hurdle for a grieving family or a grieving person, so I am going to just vote no on this because of that amendment.
Let me understand you, Director Bronstein. It hasn't been amended yet. You're talking about the amendment as proposed tonight from staff?
Yes,
your with that with, vote no because
of that clause about the memorial.
About the no memorial.
Yes.
Okay. Any other, Director Planbeck?
President or Director Planbeck, could you hold off on your comments just for a moment till your mic comes on? There we go. Your mic's on. Now start.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot. I thought I had pushed it, but I didn't. Anyway, I would support the general manager's suggestion that there be some accommodation for benches with memorial plaques on them. And I don't think we have to say what the dimension is. I just think we could say that there's an accommodation for that, because there aren't any benches over there, and benches are really expensive. And it's, if someone wants to do a memorial bench for a particular person, I think it's lovely.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. And I would just add, if to the list of exceptions, the expansion of the youth group could be included in that, because I, from what I understood currently, it could not be expanded the way it's worded. Did I hear that right? Okay. So I would ask that the expansion of the youth group be included so that the city wouldn't have to jump through extra hoops to have that done. Thank you. Oh, and I just wanted to say, I failed to thank Ms. Jacob and Mr. Lim. I try to always say thank you for the presentations, and then I jumped right into my comments and questions. Thank you very much both for your presentations. Thank you.
Hold on. So what is the, Director Gutzeit, what is your position on your motion? You're standing by your motion as the motion to approve the lease agreement as changed, as in your board packet.
Yes, I think I'd like to have it as written, unless we discuss it with the city at this point. I mean, we're hearing groves, we're hearing benches. Maybe the city is partnered to this contract, and we're adding stuff that they didn't hear about. So I'd like to, my motion would be as written. And then if that fails, you know, I'd like to see it go back for further discussion with the city. Okay. Rather than presuppose what they would accept.
All right, Director Colley has a question. Go ahead, Director Colley.
Thank you. Just a question for Joe. Joe, have you heard what you would say is consensus of the board that we would want to allow the general manager to be able to create an exception for something which is not primarily of memorial nature, but rather a utilitarian park function that happens to have some sort of a memorial purchase and plaque on it. Have you heard that consensus, and would you be able to draft language after this board meeting that would convey that authority to the general manager?
Yeah, Director Colley, I'll leave it to those, because I'm not in the room, and also to the board members to determine whether there's a consensus or not. But certainly language would be very easy to do. And I did just have one clarification to Director Armitage's comment. I guess the question would be, by expansion of the Grove, do you mean expansion of the area of the Grove? So I think what was said earlier, which I agree with, is that names could be added to the existing memorial. But that as drafted, it would prohibit there being an expanded space for the Grove. So
I was going to comment on that as well. I think the wording says the Youth Grove area is excuse me, I'm trying to find it here. So I took that to mean that they could continue to fill in names, I mean, regrettably, within the Youth Grove area. And if you've been out area, you know, it has its own kind of limits based on other functions of the park right now. There are some play fields below it. There's some pretty significant elevation change. And then there's a trail behind it. So I would think if it came to a point where it was full, the city would probably need to start considering either options to within that space or have something more significant, which would then probably, you know, make it necessary to have a little more of a discussion about that and bring back a proposal. I think we're hopefully some time off from that actually ever happening. But if it did happen, it might need, you know, something more comprehensive to address it, because it would have to encroach on space that's being used in other ways right now.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Director, Vice President Ozahowski.
Ms. Jacob, thank you for checking with JPIA and making sure that we have proper language in terms of insurance and indemnity for this lease. Much appreciated. Regarding section 11.03, you know, we're considering one proposal, a bench. What if a family or member of the public comes with a proposal for a swing or some other facility that will be beneficial to park goers? You know, what do we do then? So I think we're just hung up on one particular item here, the benches, but there could be more. So I would propose that we move forward with this and with the language as is. And then if there's anything that does come forward, it comes forward to the board, and then we'll discuss it then. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Vice President Ozahowski. I think one of our objectives is to write this amendment such that things don't come back to the board for approval. And so I think we never had an issue with adding names in the Youth Grove prior to the last memorial events that occurred. Our desire was to have the lease amended so that major new memorial facilities were not added and didn't have to come to the board or the city for approval. I think adding a bench, standard bench, with some sort of memorial indicator on it, why my way of looking at things is it comes under the heading of park related, and it's under the general manager and staff's purview to approve without coming to the board. So I guess that's the way I'd like to have it, if that's possible. Mr. Byrne, or Mr. Stone, or Mr. Cole, or Mr. Byrne.
Yeah, this is Joe. I would, you know, the language does say additional, or firstly, I agree that the Youth Grove area would allow for additional names within that space that's currently existing. And when it comes to the signs on benches, the language does say additional memorials or commemorative signs. So I think it, I hear what you're saying, President Martin, about it. Certainly it's a, putting a bench up is within the authorized purposes and certainly consistent with park. It would just be helpful to clarify that, you know, the language we have here, commemorative signs, would seem to potentially prohibit that. So I would, again, I'd probably recommend that we just clarify and say, with the exception of, you know, plaques placed on benches with dimensions that are approved by the general manager, something like that.
So in that regard, Mr. President, if I may, I think that, the process here, I mean, I am in the room. I do hear a lack of consensus on this issue. And I think that the way to deal with it, the existing motion is to accept the staff recommendation as is. You could take an amendment that asks council to draft, if you're okay with that, a provision for benches, or however the maker of the amendment wants to categorize what's permitted. And then the board can discuss that and vote on that narrow question, and then go back to the question of whether to approve the lease.
Okay, this is Lynn Planbeck, and I'd like to make that motion.
I think Director Cooper had his hand up before Director Planbeck. So Director Cooper, please go ahead and make your comment.
You know, this is the same thing that we did with the memorial when it came to asking us to put the memorial in. We can what if this thing to death. It's not our park. We own the land, but it's the city's park. If the city wants to put in benches with people's names on them that are donated, then the city can come to us and ask that. Is we're putting the staff put together exactly what was asked for by this board, which was to not have any more memorials built in the park. So I would propose that we just go ahead and approve what staff's recommendation is tonight. If the city comes back to us and says, hey, we'd like to put in a program where people can buy benches and put a little brass plaque on them in memorial of somebody, that's fine. We don't care. You know, it's not like it's a new memorial that's going in down there. And they can ask us and we can agree to it and amend the lease. I don't see a problem with that. It's up to the city to do those things. It's up to the city to increase the frisbee golf down there. It's up to the city to move the fences. That's not our job. Our job is we leased it out because we want a buffer between this plant and the public housing, because we have hazardous chemicals up here. So we wanted to continue that buffer. And we wanted to provide the city with some parkland. Let's do the lease like we asked staff to do. And then if the city has a project that they want to come back and ask for brass plaques on benches.
Okay, where we are now with the motion and a second. Director Planbeck, what was you were making another motion?
Well, I just feel like it's too bad to bring the whole thing back and have to go through an amendment process for something as small as a bench. So that's why I would like to have some leeway where the general manager could make a decision about it without bringing it to the whole board. And that was the language I was looking for, just because we've spent a pretty lot of time on this already. And I know I understand why we have this section in here. So that's why I thought that some language about smaller consideration items could just go to the general manager. And that's the proposal I'd like to make. It's some wording in there that if it's really a minor thing, it could be decided at the general manager level. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like not changing the whole sign. I mean, I think the reason we had signs in there was because you didn't want another big thing on the CLWA monument. That's what I was.
So, Director Planbeck, could you state your motion to amend it? It's now with discussing it before you've made it. It's hard to tell voting
on. Well, I didn't know exactly how to word it. So it was just a proposal to allow the general manager to have prerogative on small changes or something like that.
Changes in general or just memorials? You don't want to have this lease be amendable by the general manager, no. In my opinion.
All right. I don't know. Maybe that won't work. I'm just trying to find a way that they could have benches.
President Martin.
Well, you can move to have memorial bench instead. And then if other board members want something different, they can go through the process there. But my thought is that you have to have a motion on the floor that you're discussing. An amendment in this case.
Okay, well, I've moved to...
Are you making a motion to amend?
Yeah, I was making a motion to amend. Do you have a suggestion?
All right, we need a second on the motion to amend.
Director Planbeck, I think, the amendment you're making it in terms of our current general manager. And we certainly have a lot of trust with the current general manager. But what happens in the future?
Just too bad we can't figure out where to have benches in the park for without having to all come back to the board and get an amendment. I just think that's so much bureaucracy to this.
Well, and I don't want to be writing your motion for you, Director Planbeck, but I am interested in having the board understand what they're voting on.
I'll just so one thing would because be because I don't know.
Okay.
And President Martin, Director Colley has his hand up.
Director Ford.
Thank you, President Martin. Maybe we could approach this from a slightly different way in that what was a concern, I think, last time was that the city had a proposal and there was some doubt as to whether or not they were coming back to the board to get our approval for what they wanted to do. But eventually they came around on that. And I think the minor things, as Director Planbeck has brought up, it'd be nice to have approved without issue. So I'm wondering if we could just tighten the language on 11.03 to say the city shall not have any new dedicated areas or facilities for memorials within the park. And then perhaps simple things where a placard is placed on a playset or on a bench would be something that would be permitted.
And Director Ford, are you comfortable with council? And I better ask Council Byrne too, because he's the one that would be doing it, having council write that into language.
I would, yes.
And this is Joe. My only comment on that, Director Ford, is that benches, I presume, would be throughout the park area. So again, I do think if benches is the intent, and I understand that there's a few people who think there might be other types of items that could have a plaque on them, then I think the cleanest would be just to make an exception for benches with commemorative signs, which are, small in nature and size of which is approved by the general manager. But I think Dr. Colley's got his hand up and I think he's going to say something similar maybe to what I'm saying. But.
Director Colley, go ahead.
Yeah, Joe is obviously, we're not texting back and forth. We really aren't. But that's exactly what I like to do is have council write language that will allow for small commemorative signs on park-related things, whether it be benches or somebody else mentioned if we want to have a swing in the future or whatever. This debate is interesting because what we want to prevent is new 11-foot tall multiple obelisks popping up all over the park. And we clearly didn't want that to happen. And that was the original point of this language. But I agree with the Gary, when he says that we really don't want to have to hash this over a small sign on a bench. So I would like to, I'm not sure if Director Planbeck's motion was clear enough and said essentially what I just said, but if it did, then I second that motion and would like to amend the motion on the floor to reflect the general manager's authority to allow small commemorative signage on park-related equipment without having to come back to the board for an amendment to this lease. Thanks.
I accept that as a modification to my original motion. If that is the proper procedure, Mr. Bunn, can we just accept that as a modification of the original motion?
Yes, if the second also accepts it.
Okay. The original motion has been amended and the second agrees with it. So
I would like to read something that I was just writing down. I like Mr. Colley's suggestion. I wrote down small placards on park equipment or fixtures. You know, are the exception to the no memorial rule with approval of the general manager and the city of Santa Clarita, like mutual approval, something to that language or that extent. I personally would like dimensions, but if nobody wants dimensions, I still think the intent is clear.
Well, I think throughout to good sight, the initiation of this would come from the city to start with. So I don't think the water agency is going to propose to put in a bench.
Well, I just wanted to make it clear that if, you know, a member of the public pulls the contract, looks at it and sees that it's subject to the general manager's approval, that they don't consult with the city if the city has strong feelings about plaques on their equipment.
Okay. Director Kelly.
I'm just wondering why we need to have this phrase regarding the general manager as part of the amendment and why we can't just do something separately outside of the amendment to the contract that would give the general manager authorization to deal with this subject, thereby not having to continue to change amendments in the future. And that, to me, would be less complicated. And we could change, obviously, we could change that motion at any time without going back to the city if we wanted to pull that away from the general manager.
And I think the proposed amendment says the general manager would have the authority to make that consideration and approval without coming to the board, as long as it's a park-related item with a small commemorative plaque or a sign. Is that correct? All right.
Yes.
I just have one question to Ms. Gutzeit's restatement of the motion, and that has to do with city approval, because that can mean various things. And I frankly think the city should probably be able to decide whatever its approval is. So my suggestion would be to take that out.
So our general manager can make the decision by himself?
No, the general manager, this can only be done with the approval of the general manager, but it would take some sort of city approval as well.
So would that be included or not included to install a bench with a plaque?
Well, you can say, well, I'm confusing myself here.
I think I have it, Director Gutzeit. So I think there would be an exception for small commemorative signs on park-related equipment or fixtures. And we could have commas such as a bench with the approval of the general manager. I mean, to Tom's point, we're going to get a request from the city, and their process for approval is their process for approval. But that would allow the general manager to determine, and we could do so ahead of time, the dimensions of the types of signs, and then to administratively make the decisions as these are coming in. And of course, if there was something that was, you know, he or she were nervous about, the general manager could bring it back to the board for additional input.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, the public could not come to us and point to this contract and say, I want to put in a bench, Mr. General Manager, and not go through the city.
Why don't we add language at the beginning? Joe, tell me if you're okay with this, saying at the request of the city, comma.
Okay.
Yeah, great idea.
I accept that.
President Martin, Director Colley has his hand up.
Yes, Director Colley, go ahead.
No, that's perfect. Since the city needs to do the requesting, they don't need to do an approval. So yeah, I like the idea. Thanks.
Okay. We're there. So the amended motion, as you have understood, Mr. Byrne, is on the table. Unless there's any further discussion, I'd like to call for the vote.
I'd like 30 seconds. All right. Well, you'll get public comment.
Mr. Byrne, would you do...
It's a matter of whether you hear it before you vote.
Mr. Byrne, would you repeat exactly what the motion is, just so I have it for record?
Sure, and this language may or may not be perfect, but I think it'll give you... So the city shall not erect, permit, or authorize any additional memorials or commemorative signs in or about the premises, with the exception of, comma, at the request of the city, small commemorative signs on park-related equipment or fixtures, comma, such as a bench, with the approval of the general manager.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne.
Very good. With that, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
No.
Excuse me, members of the public, would you please keep it down just a little bit? Really loud and hard for me to hear. Thank you. Director Bronstein.
No.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Gutzeit.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Planbeck.
Yes.
Vice President Ozuchowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass. And that's resolution number SCV-2. I'm sorry, I need my stronger glasses. Okay.
Thank you, Board. Thank you, staff, for hanging in through this discussion.
President Martin, just real quick, that's SCV-298.
Thank you. I think the time we spent is going to save us time down the road coming back to the board for something that I think should be on the general manager's purview. So we can now move on to, let's see, we are now to item 6.3, and presenter tonight is Tom Bunn. It's the discussion and possible action regarding the vacant Division II board seat. Mr. Bunn.
Oh, wait, I take that back on that. Oh, no, that was correct on my resolution. Sorry. Yeah, that's right.
President Martin, members of the board, the question coming before the board tonight is whether to fill the vacant seat caused by Director Gladbach's passing. This is very similar to the action that the board considered after Director Atkins resigned. We're interpreting the same statutes. The time limits for filling the seat are the same, but there's one important difference, and that is that Director Glambeck's term ends at the end of this year. So starting January 1, that seat will be filled by whoever is elected to that seat in November. As a result of that, the option for calling an election in March to fill the remainder of that term does not make any sense. And there's essentially only two things that the board can do. It can fill the seat using the same type of process as being done in the other seat, or it cannot fill the seat, in which case it's passed over to the Board of Supervisors to decide whether to fill the seat. If the board determines to fill the seat, that whole process has to be done within 60 days after Director Gladbach's death. That includes posting the matter in the newspaper and on the website, taking applications, making sure that the person lives within the district and so forth, scheduling interviews, conducting those interviews, and then having board action at the end. And I go through all of that because I don't know that we made that as clear last time. There is a proposed time schedule, tentative time schedule, if the board decides to do that, which is included in your packet after the staff report. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Bunn. Before we go to questions, do have a public comment card. Mr. Petzl, you now can speak if you'd like to make your public comment.
Yes, I feel it unfortunate that I wasn't recognized. You went and you had a long discussion about memorials in that park, and that was not on the agenda for 6.2. There's a, 150-page contract in which memorials is like one paragraph of that. If you're going to have a discussion about memorials, you should have put that in the agenda and what your policy is. But that being said, I have a proposal right now before the city of Santa Clarita to memorialize the airplane crash that took place here over Central Park in 1954, where 20 ministers bailed out of a DC-3 and were into the drunk farm. And that is part of the project that is being approved down there. It's a $100,000 allotment for an art project with a multi-field expansion. Now, I don't want to hear any of you come back and say, no, we can't allow a memorial.
Mr. Petzl, is this related to 6.3?
It is not, but you're hearing, I wanted 30 seconds to tell you that there is a memorial that may come up over the next 60 days for Central Park to that plane crash, and to have you discuss this tonight without any consideration, say, well, we can do a park bench, but we're not going to commemorate 20 men who parachuted into Central Park safely after their airplane malfunctioned. I will move into 6.3. That's why I wanted 30 seconds. And if I would have known that this memorial thing was going to be a big deal, I would have used that time.
Excuse me, you're out of order.
Who said that?
I did, the general manager. Okay, Mr. Petzl,
okay,
on 6.3. I do appreciate, I think we heard your comment.
Okay, on 6.3, I want you to fill the seat. I do not want the LA County Board of Supervisors, those crazy people. You have four crazy people on that Board of Supervisors. There is no way that you should allow that seat to be filled by those crazy people in downtown Los Angeles. You should take responsibility for filling that seat. It's very unfortunate what happened to the past director, but there is no way that the people of Santa Clarita want you allowing this Board of Supervisors downtown filling that seat. So I ask you to appoint. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butzel. Madam Secretary, do we have any other public comments online?
We do not.
All right. Board, you've heard the presentation from Mr. Bunn on our options going forward. Are there any questions or comments or proposals? I'd like to ask Mr. Bunn, though, before we do that. If the board does not have the necessary votes to decide to appoint tonight, does the Board of Supervisors have the prerogative to begin their process before the end of our 60-day period that we have to appoint the seat?
They can't take any official action until after that 60 days.
60 days is the earliest they can begin to take their official action. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. With that, Director Kelly.
I appreciate the timeline I had asked for it after the confusion with regards to BJ Atkins. And so this timeline really helped me visualize a lot more. The question I have, first of all, is the appointment date is the important date here because it's before 9/11. It has nothing to do with the swearing in date. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. That's the date by which you must appoint.
So with that, I'd make a motion that we appoint. I think it's the only sound thing that the water agency should do. We should take charge. We should make sure that we get somebody in here that is recognizable to the water agency, that can do a good job for the water agency and not somebody that's an outsider. So with that, you have my motion.
So basically, your motion is to go through with an appointment process.
With the appointment process, yes.
All right. Any other discussion, or is there a second to that? Vice President Ozowski.
Mr. Bunn, can you describe the process with the county? meaning who makes that appointment and who votes on it? Is it all five? Is it just one particular supervisor that makes that appointment? Can you please explain that process?
It's the Board of Supervisors as a whole. Generally, they defer to the wishes of the supervisor in the particular district, but I can't say what they're going to do in any particular case.
So any of the supervisors can make an appointment?
No,
not an appointment, a nomination.
Yes.
So any supervisor
they would have it as an agenda item, and anyone could make a motion to appoint a particular person. Or a consent item, as the case may be, but I don't want to recall how the Board of Supervisors is going to handle it, but it's up to the whole board to decide using their normal board processes.
Understood. I mean, with the elections being so close, if for example the board decides not to fill that seat and wait for the results of the election and ask the legal team to write a letter to the Board of Supervisors, asking them not to make a nomination and not to consider an appointment. Could that letter be binding or,
We cannot bind with the Board of Supervisors. However, we've actually come across an instance in the past where a board wrote to Supervisor Barter, it turned out to be the same supervisor, asking her to commit to not filling the seat. But there was never a response to that letter, and that board decided to go ahead and fill the seat. But that's what you would do. You would do it in advance and say the board is considering leaving it vacant. Would you promise us that you're not going to do anything about it?
And if they don't do anything about it, what's the process after that? What are the options?
Well, this would be if you wanted to leave the seat vacant until January 1st.
So no government code will require us to bring back to the board for a nomination or an appointment by the board of directors here on SCU Water.
That's my opinion, yes. The statute, I think I mentioned in the staff report that the statute is not entirely clear with respect to the option of calling an election. But as I said, it doesn't make any sense to call an election in March 2023 to fill the seat for 2022. So I'm assuming that's not an option.
Understood. Thank you.
I'd like to go to Director Colley. He has his hands up. Go ahead, Director Colley.
Yeah, thank you. There was quite a bit of a discussion recently about filling a vacant seat. And there were several folks on the board that believed, and I agree with them, that if possible, having the voters vote on who fills our seats is the preferable thing to do. I would hope the county's Board of Supervisors would feel the same, and they would be willing to leave that seat vacant until such time as January 1st, which is coming up rather quickly. So I think since the original motion by Director Kelly seems to have failed for a second, I will make a motion that we not fill that seat and that we ask that we communicate to the Board of Supervisors, and it would be verbally the general manager or a board officer to contact the Board of Supervisors and ask them to simply allow the voters to fill that seat effective the 1st of January. So that's my motion to not fill the seat. Thank you.
I would like to second it.
Hold on a second. Director Kelly had his hand up. I'd like to hear what he has to say about his original motion.
I'm not sure that there was even a request for a second.
I
don't think that it failed.
We didn't really ask for a second, Director Kelly. So can we backpedal a little bit?
So where is my motion?
Just to clarify, as a point of order, I definitely heard a request for a second, and I did not hear the second. So that's what I heard.
All right, then.
I will second Director Kelly's motion.
All right, we do have a second for Director Kelly's motion. Director, Mr. Bunn, are we in order here? We've had a motion and then a second motion and a second on the first motion after the second motion. So,
As I see it, I agree that there was not sufficient time given to see whether there was a second to the original motion or not. So I think we are in order on that.
Okay, so we should consider the second motion.
No, it's...
Is that what you just said?
We are in order in having Director Gutzeit second it
now. Okay, that's fine. So we do have a motion and a second.
It just launched into a discussion before... Whether or not a second was requested, there really wasn't time to give one, is my recollection.
Okay. All right. So we do have a motion to appoint with a second on that motion. Is there any other questions or discussion from the board? Director Gutzeit.
I would like to just reiterate what Mr. Bunn said happened before. My understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, we asked the county to not appoint, and they did anyways, despite what we asked them.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't.
Is that what you said? Clear.
First of all, it was not SCV Water or any of its predecessor agencies. When we got into this situation, we looked around. As a matter of fact, I said in the staff report that we were talking with the elections official,
mm-hmm.
and the elections official said that he recalled a case which concerned one of my firm's clients.
Oh.
So I went to the attorney and who handled that client and said, did you do this? And he said, no, I didn't do that, but I did for this third client. And so the request was made to Supervisor Barger, but before getting a response, or I don't know whether there was a response or not, the board eventually changed its mind and decided to appoint before getting a yes or a no from Supervisor Barker.
Okay.
So I don't really have any precedent about her. I was just citing that as one way to approach it is to get her to commit before you decide not to fill it.
Okay. Because I know for this agency, the only appointment that Supervisor Barger did for a vacancy was, I believe, Director Acosta, right?
No, she appointed Director Ford.
I thought Mr. Acosta was by appointment also. He was. Both. Okay, both Ford and Acosta were appointed by Catherine Barger. And I am personally uncomfortable with it going before, although I do trust Supervisor Barger's judgment, you know, it would go before the full board as we are getting into election season. And I, you know, I hesitate there. I would like to take responsibility for this election as a board, which is why I seconded Director Kelly's motion.
All right. Any other questions or discussion from the board? Director Planbeck.
Well, that's an interesting turn of phrase that you'd like to take responsibility for the election. I mean, basically, you're appointing someone that would get appointed for 2 months or 3 months or something. So I support asking Supervisor Barger. I think we still would have time to move forward with the process if the general manager were able to contact her and she could commit to that. And the way the Board of Supervisors normally work and the way it worked with Mr. Acosta was Supervisor Barger chose someone and the rest of the Board of Supervisors supported her. That's the way that's the politics of that board. Within the supervisor's district, the other board members generally support. I've never seen them not support what the particular supervisor wanted to do. So I would like to suggest a substitute motion, which is the one that Director Colley was trying to make. Maybe we could vote on that and then we could go back to.
This is the motion to amend, Director Plantwright?
No, it's a substitute motion, which would be to contact the supervisor with the process that Mr. Bunn suggested.
That's essentially a motion to amend.
Okay. I thought it was a substitute motion, whatever you want to call it.
And do we have a second on the motion to amend?
I don't see how it could be a motion to amend because it's completely different. I see, because we would go back to his motion if she
correct.
Didn't feel. Okay,
correct.
That's fine. Thanks.
Do we have a second? Vice President Ozahusky?
Just checking on Dr. Planbeck's motion and looking at page 391. I believe we will have time. How about this? Let me rephrase. Mr. Bunn, will we be able to hear from Supervisor Catherine Barger's office within a day or two?
I have no idea.
Okay. Director Planbeck, can you restate your substantive motion again?
It was just to have the general manager contact Supervisor Barger's office to see if she would be willing to not appoint prior to, and then move forward with the process to appoint if she.
I second that.
And restate the whole motion.
The motion would be to have the general manager contact Supervisor Barger's office to see if she would be willing to not appoint and allow there to be an election in November, and if she is not able to make a statement like that, then to bring it back to the board for consideration of an appointment.
Excuse me, Tom, General Counsel Bunn, if we do that, it wouldn't come back to the board at the 16th, which gives us very, very little time to be able to get it in the paper, have interviews, and get this person appointed and sworn in before the deadline.
Thank you.
Could it?
Director,
something the board needs to know.
I was going to say, if the language just says if she can't, then we appoint.
I mean, it doesn't have to come back to the board. Oh. It's a need, you know, if she can't do it, then we appoint.
May I suggest Director that you Cooper. Have a timeline, though, on the amount of time you're going to give Supervisor Barker's office to respond, because that will limit the amount of time I have to post and to receive applications.
Director Cooper.
I agree with Director Planbeck. If Supervisor Barger were to say, fine, let's leave it open, then that's fine. If not, then come back and appoint. But the date really isn't September 11th. Jerry passed away on July 14th, so it would be, wouldn't it be September 14th? Isn't that 60 days out?
If you count it out, it comes to, Tom, we did that. What was our date? September?
September 11th, I believe, yeah. I believe it was the 13th that he passed away.
14th.
Okay.
31 days. Okay, I mean, if we have to have a special board meeting to do it, we can do it. But I like the idea of letting Supervisor Barger take a look at it. If she says we'll leave it open, that's fine. I'm fine with that.
And I want to say again, just to make sure that everyone understands, in my response to Director Ozahofsky's question, even if Supervisor Barger agrees to that, she does not commit the Board of Supervisors. I mean, I agree with Director Planbeck that the Board of Supervisors generally does what that supervisor in the particular district wants, but there's no guarantee.
I want to agree with that, because in particular, just in the paper today or recently, you know, the Camp Scott issue, Supervisor Barger has opposed that. The whole other board is pushing that through. So she does not always get what her what her wishes are, nor even if she says no, they can still go ahead and do it, correct?
It's my understanding.
Yeah. And if something happens, we lose any ability to adequately advertise for this. Whoever is appointed probably will not be able to file to run in the election. So whoever is appointed will be a dead duck, essentially. There's a lot of timing issues that make this very sticky, and I wish Supervisor Barger had the sole authority on this, but I don't think she's going to.
And President Martin, right. May I just state, so just for the record, so Vice President Gladbach passed away on Wednesday, July 13th. We started the count as of the 14th, which brings us to September 11th. So we have to make a decision and have somebody sworn in by September 11th. That is your 60 days.
One correction, as I said before, they don't have to be sworn in. We just have to appoint them.
General Counsel Bunn, can we verify that? Because as far as I know, and Mr. Byrne, we've discussed as well, that they had to be sworn in before, because it's just a ceremonial oath that we do following board meeting.
Be happy to confirm that.
Thank you.
So why don't we put a time limit on contacting Supervisor Barger as part of the, if we can't get a hold of her within 4 days or something like that, then we move forward with appointment.
President Martin, we also have Director Colley with his hand up.
Let's do Director. Director Colley, then I'll come back to you, Director Bronstein. Director Colley.
I certainly defer to Director Bronstein.
Go ahead, Director Bronstein.
So first of all, I don't think that it's our job to worry about if the person that gets appointed can run for office this cycle or not, or anything. Like, that's not something that we should be considering, like, as a factor. I also think that the risk of allowing the public to vote versus perhaps them being able to appoint someone for, like, how long are we talking about, is really such a minute amount of time that I don't think that it's such a big risk to run here. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Director Colley, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's actually an excellent point. If the Board of Supervisors decided to do something strange and actually appoint, it would be an appointment for only a very few months. And I think, though, the original idea of contacting Barger's office and asking if she would commit to not trying to appoint would be a good thing. And then if after, let's say, a week, we could not get a response, then we could call a special meeting and get this ball rolling. If we thought that the Board of Supervisors was going to appoint if we failed to. So I think that the substitute motion, or not substitute motion, the motion to amend is a good one, and I would certainly support it.
So the motion to amend is to contact Supervisor Barger's office and see if she'll commit to not moving a motion to appoint. Does it also carry with it the contingency that if she agrees to do that, that we don't appoint, or is it standalone contact Director Barger's office and get her a response?
Go ahead, Director Colley.
My understanding is that if she was to agree to not support the Board of Supervisors doing an appointment, we would take no further action. We simply would not be meeting. We would not start an appointment process. That would be The action would be a non-action at that point. But if she says, nope, I plan to appoint, or, you know, I'm going to support the Board of Supervisors doing an appointment, then the board, the officers that you, the president, should certainly then immediately call a special meeting so we can get, as others have suggested, where we would take responsibility for doing that appointment so that they do not.
Yeah, it sounds to me like the preference is to table this item until we contact the the supervisor's office and get a response and then decide what to do after that.
Well, I heard that, and I heard another proposal that we just go ahead and not appoint if she...
Okay.
That we appoint if she doesn't commit to leaving it vacant.
Can you bring us up to date on what the motion is that we're considering?
Well, I'm going to ask first whether there's a time limit, because I think another possibility is that she doesn't respond.
Another possibility is what, Mr.
Is that Supervisor Barker just doesn't respond to the inquiry, and we need to know at what time do we move forward with appointment, assuming that's what the board wants to do.
Well, I had in my motion 4 days, and Director. Mr. Colley suggested a week.
Vice President Ozahosky, go ahead. You got the floor.
I think an SME on this, looking at page 291, is our board secretary. How many days would we need to hear from Supervisor Barker's office? Two, three? What's the most? Considering we'll...
And plus, my question would be, if she did get back to us, does she have to go to her board to get that support? And if she's got to get support from her board to make that decision, that could take longer for it to come back to our board. And then you're assuming we can get, if the motion is just to move forward, if she says no, then we're good to go, because then I could put it in the paper, although I still need the timelines to be able to do that. But if the motion is to wait to hear back from her and then call a special board meeting, then we're waiting on her board of supervisors to back her on that. And then for me to set up a special board meeting, which, as many of you know, with such short notice, especially in August, is almost impossible to get a full board to be able to be here to make that decision. So my timeline would be very slim, very slim.
Director Ford, did you want to speak?
I do. Thank you, President Martin.
Yes.
I don't know that the option that's being discussed, Director Planbeck's motion, makes a great deal of sense in terms of the choice we have here. If we're saying to the supervisor, would you please not appoint, but if you do, then we are going to go ahead and appoint instead, I don't think is a good approach for our long-term relations with her. Tonight's decision, I think, should be we either decide to appoint ourselves or else we choose not to and take our chances that potentially she might. I'm guessing that she probably won't, given the duration of the position, but I don't know that for certain. But I think that would be our real choice here tonight, rather than opposed to putting on an either-or operation her office.
Okay. I actually agree with Director Ford. I really don't feel comfortable with going to the supervisor's office and trying to get a response before we take action. My sense of the votes, as I hear the discussion tonight, there's probably not enough votes to appoint tonight anyway. So I would like to either go ahead and take the vote and see how it turns out, or go ahead and table this item and bring it back at a future date, undetermined. I understand, April, that your timeline is pretty tight, and probably taking a delay action on this probably kills the appointment process anyway. So with that.
Unless we make a decision in the next week.
Director Armitage, go ahead.
Thank you. So we have a legislative advocate that's supposed to be advocating for us and communicating with our local level elected officials, Hunt Brawley, correct? And we pay him money to do so. would it be appropriate to involve him in this conversation and ask him to try to get us a conversation with the supervisor?
We certainly could. I mean, on something like this, I think if we're going to ask, I think it probably is just most appropriate for the GM to make that contact directly.
No, I agree with that. But can Mr. Brawley help make the connect, like express the urgency that this matter requires, and that how important it is that we either that she let us know her intentions, basically.
Yeah, certainly we can engage Mr. Brawley to do that.
Okay, I just feel like there's got to be somebody within the agency's purview or on this board who has a connection to Supervisor Barger that can start that conversation. Thank you.
Yep, welcome.
Director Kelly.
I'd only like to make note that, as far as I know, Hunt Brawley is in Canada on his normal 2 months of vacation time. So that may also hamper our timeline.
Director Bronstein.
I just wanted to say that I actually agree with you and that we should make a decision one way or the other. I just wanted to let you know.
Well, the last motion we had was the motion to contact Director Barger's office and make our decision contingent upon what her response is. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I just wanted to say that I thought Ms. Jacobs had something else that she started to say, and I wanted to make sure that she got to say whatever that was.
I think I forgot.
Okay.
All right, that's the last motion, then we should take the vote.
Can we just for clarification, so we're contacting Supervisor Barger's office to see if she won't appoint, and then what? And then if she doesn't within, is there a dateline, or am I setting up a special board meeting for next week? Like what?
Well, I did make the motion with trying to contact her between 4 days and a week and just going forward with appointment. If we can't reach her or she can't confirm that would be what she would do.
So within 4 days, let's say 1 week from today.
Right.
Is that so? 1 week from today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we appoint.
So what else? What's
and then
the
it
rest?
Would automatically be that we appoint. You wouldn't have to have a board meeting. You just have to have the next meeting begin the appointment process. Sorry. I'm trying to clarify.
So, no, that's good, Director Planbeck. And maybe I could state it a little bit more comprehensively. We give her a week from today to respond. If she agrees not to appoint, then we don't appoint. We let the seat stay vacant.
If she agrees not to appoint, then we do what?
Then we don't appoint. We let the seat stay vacant.
So basically,
if I may, Mr. President, I just want to complete the thought. If, however, she declines to agree to that or we don't hear from her, then we go ahead and appoint. Is my understanding of the motion. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Okay, that's the motion then. If the vote is voting to appoint contingent upon a response of some kind from the supervisor, and if she indicates she won't support an appointment, but we've already taken a vote to appoint.
The question we're asking her is to refrain from appointing someone. The Board of Supervisors refrain.
Okay,
if
so
she comes back and
that's
says
the only action, we're not taking a vote to appoint or not to appoint. Is that correct?
No, that was not my understanding. My understanding was we were making, as you said, making that vote, that decision contingent on what Director Barger that Supervisor Barger comes back with.
So, okay.
So if she comes back, let me try and say it again. If she comes back and says, I agree. I'll allow you to keep this vacant. I won't present it to my board. or whatever she and then says our in vote that regard, to then we allow, we keep it vacant. That's... But if she says, I can't make that commitment, then we appoint.
Director Cooper, this sounds very strange to me.
Well, I think the motion is that we fill the position subject to Catherine Barger not leaving the position vacant. We're making the motion tonight to fill the position unless Catherine Barger says that she will not seek to have it filled at the Board of Supervisors.
Is that appropriate, Mr. Byrne? It just doesn't sound right to me. But
I think that's right. It's stated the way that Director Cooper stated it is different, but it comes to the same result.
Okay. All right. So the motion on the table is to vote to appoint contingent upon Supervisor Barger's response to our question about whether you will comply with our wishes of not presenting an appointment to her board.
Correct. It's complicated.
Director, Vice President Ozahowski.
Okay, my original understanding of Director Planbeck's amendment here was that we would contact Catherine Barger's office and see whether there's an appetite to appoint or not. If there isn't an appetite to appoint, then we leave the seat vacant. If she cannot make that sort of a commitment, we meet here again and we vote on this issue, whether to fill it or not. And then we move forward via a special board meeting
That was not my understanding. My understanding
I wasn't making any special.
Director Planbeck's motion was to contact Catherine Barger's office, give her 1 week from today to respond. If she responds back and says she can commit to not appointing to fill the seat, to leave it vacant, then we would leave it vacant. If we do not hear back from her, then I would officially go ahead and start my process as of Wednesday or Tuesday of next week.
Yep, that's it.
Yes. That's what the motion is, correct.
Mm-hmm.
But Director Colley does have his hand up.
Director Colley, you have your hand up?
Yes. So I'm no longer comfortable at all with the motion that would set in motion a contingency based on the interpretation of what Catherine Barger may have told someone about her intention. So in order to accomplish the same result, I'm going to offer and before this gets seconded, you got to be careful because I hate to cut off conversation needlessly, but my motion would be to table. And if a second was taken on that motion, then it would be tabled and we would cease having this conversation until such time as the general manager contacted Catherine Barger's office. And then provided that information, whatever was gleaned from that conversation to the board president, and then the board president would then take action as appropriate to either call a special meeting or not to effectively create what it seems to be that the majority of this board is after. So I'm going to make a motion to table, and I hate doing that because it does cut off conversation, but I think that's a way around this motion that sets in motion something which we would not necessarily want.
Thank you, Director Colley. Mr. Bond, can you give us a ruling on this now? Where are we?
Well, it's within his prerogative to move to table, but let me point out that then you don't have a board vote on whether to contact Director Barger at all.
But doesn't preclude us from contacting the director's office, I mean, the supervisor's office.
That's correct.
Right. Is anybody interested in seconding the motion to table?
I'll second.
Director Bronstein has seconded the motion to table this item. Then we are obligated to take a vote on that. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll on the motion to table?
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Ford.
No.
Director Gutzeit.
No.
Director Plambeck.
No.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
No.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
No.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Vice President Ozerhofsky.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes. Fails.
It did fail.
So the motion to table fails. Is that correct?
Correct. So the motion on the floor is Director Plambeck's.
All right. Mm-hmm. So we go to Director Plambeck's motion.
Okay. As I call your name, please state how you vote.
Yeah, was seconded.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
No.
Director Colley.
No.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
No.
Director Plambeck.
Yes.
Director Gutzeit.
No.
Director Ford.
No.
Vice President Ozerhofsky.
Yes.
President Martin.
No.
Fails.
So this item does not pass because it was all no's, and so...
So now we're back to the original motion, which is to vote to fill the seat.
All right.
It was not all no's.
It was no. I mean, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 no's, and the majority vote is 6. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4 yeses and 6 no's. You need 6 to pass. And it was a no, so it did not pass.
Okay, so the vote is to appoint.
We would go back. Mr. Bunn, right? Back to
yes,
the original.
That's correct.
So our original.
Yeah, you can discuss it further if you like before taking the vote.
And I still have the motion from Director Kelly and seconded by Director Gutzeit to begin the process to appoint.
Vice President Ozerhofsky.
Mr. Bunn, out of curiosity, in preparing tonight's memo, any reason why the GM or the legal team did not reach out to Catherine Barker's office? Would you need direction from the board to do that?
I would think so. Yeah.
So any conversations that you would have with her or any of her field representative would not be able to be stated in item 6.3.
Well, we didn't make any contact with her office, to my knowledge.
Okay.
Is that what you were asking?
No, I'm asking if it was possible without board direction for you or any of the staff to contact Catherine Barger's office and determine what is the appetite of the supervisor.
So let me amend my statement slightly. It would have been legally possible. I don't think we legally needed the direction of the board. I myself would have been uncomfortable doing that without a direction from the board, and I imagine that staff had similar thoughts.
Understood. Thank you.
Yeah, I would just offer that given the way the vote went, that was probably not advisable. however, we did take the steps of really trying to investigate the precedent, and without taking us back full circle, I think that's been explored fairly extensively in the discussion among the board members tonight that there's one can seek an assurance, and an assurance may be given, and the board may or may not honor that assurance. And so we look to precedent to see if we could gain insight to be able to better inform tonight's discussion, which is what we've tried to do. And it ultimately is just a calculated risk to go that route.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Stone. Back to you, President Martin.
Director Bronstein.
I think we've beaten this already down to like a pulp at this point, but I think that especially like with the last two seats that we voted to appoint because of time and all that, I think that enough people on the board in the vicinity of the agency have enough connections that they can probably reach out to the office of Ms. Berger and talk to her and relay our wishes. I hope that that's something that people here have, you know, contacts and connections to be able to do it. I think that the tone of the board is, I think all of us would rather leave it empty. It sounds like that to me, that most of us, okay, so you don't, but it sounds like a lot of people here would rather leave it empty if possible, because it's such a short time. And again, like appointing, like we don't want to be a self-appointed board. We really would rather let the public, and it's such a close, you know, elections are in what, 2 months, something like that, 3 months. I think we can handle it. And if for some reason, somebody that people don't like gets appointed, well, that's, again, it's like for 2 months tops. So
we do have a motion to appoint on the floor. Director Goodsite.
I'm sorry. I just feel pretty adamantly that we have two options, which was either we appoint or the supervisor appoints. And I'm trying to say this delicately, but it feels like we're trying to play a game here and come up with a third option that really doesn't exist. We're asking the supervisor to not exercise a power that is granted to them, and we are not exercising something that is granted to us, and picking a third option that is not apparently clear in the regulations or not there. I don't understand why we would do that. If somehow the stars and moons align and we manage to call a special board meeting and get people to come and then do this, then we will have people having like 10 days to apply and another special meeting to decide on them, very short interview period. That's not going to go well. This just is not sitting well with me. I know the votes are all over the place, so who knows, but this is disturbing to me. I'll just say that. And I wish we would either just appoint, ask the supervisor to appoint. I think those are our two options, and I still stand by the original motion.
So we do have a motion and a second to appoint. Are you making another motion?
No, no. I'm okay. Reiterating my original.
Very good. So my feeling of, who wants to talk? Anybody? Director Armitage, go ahead.
Thank you. Just briefly, I just want to say I feel that what I think some of us are trying to do, and I very much appreciate it, is say that ultimately we want the voters to decide, and as Director Bronstein has mentioned, we don't want to become a self-appointed board. And so I think that's what we're struggling with. And I very much appreciate the openness of the discussion to figure out if there is a way to do that. So thank you for that.
Okay. Director Bronstein.
Can I make a motion to amend that we don't appoint?
That's encompassed by the original motion.
No,
well, it actually
the motion,
is not
the original
majority.
Motion is to amend, is to appoint.
Is to appoint.
And I'm saying I would like us to not appoint.
Well, then vote no.
I guess said my substitute, point, amendment, whatever.
My point was you can just vote no on the original motion.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
You're right.
I would like to call for the vote.
President Martin, Director Colley has his hand up.
Director Colley, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say very briefly, I hope that I disagree that if we decide not to use the power we are provided and we communicate to the Board of Supervisors our reasoning that we believe the voters should fill this seat, I would think that the Board of Supervisors would agree with that and not use the power that they have. And so I think that it is I will certainly vote no on the motion and on the floor, which will, I think, end this discussion and that we will simply not appoint.
Yes. And I think that strong sends a stronger message. Hold on, Director Goodside. So just a question for Mr. Bund. Again, there's 30-day time clock doesn't start until the end of our 60-day time clock, no matter what we do. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. Director
In
Goodside.
Terms of taking official action, I don't know what their – I mean, their staff can get it all poised to okay. go.
Well, we could always,
but getting
we could
any,
always bring it back for another vote if it fails tonight one way or the other or both ways.
Yes,
we've taken no action.
That's correct. As long as you take action by that 60th day, it doesn't matter what correct. You do okay. on this first vote.
All right. So, Director Goodside.
I just need to clarify, since so many people have said this person wouldn't be elected, this if there's an appointment, that person's term stops at the end of former Director Gladbach's term. So the vote, it's not like we would be appointing someone for very long, and this person would have the choice or may be someone that already filed to run as well. So the seat past December will be the voter's decision. This is not an appointment of any significant duration. I just wanted to make that clear that it's...
Right. I think we knew that, yes. All right. Madam Secretary, please, can you call the roll?
Just to clarify, Director Kelly was the one who motioned and seconded by Director Goodside, and this is to begin the appointment process. As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
No.
Director Colley.
No.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
No.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Goodside.
Yes.
Director Planbeck.
No.
Vice President Ozerhofsky.
No.
President Martin.
No.
Please note that we did need a majority vote of 6.
All right. Very good.
So this item did not pass. Which
so
means
we essentially have taken no action tonight.
We've taken no action.
Very good.
That's fine.
Thank you all for the discussion and the thoughtful comments. We now can move on to item 7, which is Surplus Land Act information presentations presented tonight by General Counsel Joe Byrne. Mr. Byrne.
I feel like if I were Mike Alvord, I would say something funny, like you're ready for the Surplus Land Act presentation here after all these discussions. I'll try to make it brief, especially given the time. And this is an item that it's really just an update on something that has been a recent change in the law that has expanded the reach of this law a little bit more than in the past. We had a little bit of a previous discussion about it in the context of a closed session item. and I was going to build on that today. So this is really just informational, and I'm happy to dig into detail. I'm also happy to follow up with directors after the fact, too, if that's helpful. Next slide, April. Okay, so the basics of the Surplus Land Act are that it requires local agencies, including us, to comply with certain requirements when disposing of real property. The Department of Housing and Community Development has adopted some very detailed guidelines that help interpret it. And one of the reasons why it's very important to comply with the Surplus Land Act is that the penalty, if you were to sell a property that should have been deemed surplus and wasn't and don't follow the process, is 30% of the final sale price. Next slide. The general rule, and again, this law has got some confusing components to it, is that before an agency may dispose of, quote, surplus land, it must comply with certain procedural steps. So the first question really is, what is surplus land? And there are some exceptions which are important. And we do have a few examples of property that the agency owns that I'll try to weave in at the end to give you an example of how it would play out. First, it's land owned in fee. That is one declared surplus. That's after our determination of surplus and is not necessary for agency use. I'll touch on that in a second. It does not include easements, and it does not include physical structures such as buildings. So as a result, leasing a building space is something that would be outside of the Surplus Land Act. Next slide. Okay, so it says surplus man member surplus, and it's disposing of surplus land. What does it mean to dispose of it? It means to sell or to lease. There, as it relates to leases, if there is no development or demolition will occur, then it is not technically disposing of the land. It's also if a lease is less than 5 years. Next slide, April. And it's also one of the requirements is that if it's, an exception is that if it's necessary for agency use. So an example of this, and this is kind of what's here in quotes, would be, let's say we're selling property that's adjacent to one of our facilities and it's going to be used for wetlands and there's some ancillary benefit to us because of that sale. So if it's necessary for agency use, then it's not technically surplus and you don't have to go through the requirements, which I'll talk about in a second, for what property is surplus or not. Now, one exception to, or within this exception for cities and counties, they're not allowed to sell property to generate revenue. However, there's a specific carve out for special districts, which includes us. And it says that we may dispose of surplus property for revenue generation if the board finds that it's furthers express purpose of the agency works or operations, or if it's authorized by the agency act. As you can imagine, there's a fairly and potentially broad interpretation of what that means. Selling property simply to generate revenue is something that is certainly in the interest of the agency and in the interest of the ratepayers. And this is an exception that there's not a lot of clarity on. And we've had some conversations with Housing and Community Development Department about its interpretation. Next slide. Okay, if no exception applies, and I'll talk about some sections, then there's a long process that you're required to go through. And that is, declare the property for surplus. And then if it's exempt surplus, you declare it exempt surplus. But if it is considered to be surplus, then there's kind of a months long process to go through before you can actually sell or lease the property. There are some specific additional exemptions. And again, you can tell it probably is a little more complicated. And these are specifically articulated in the code. And even if it is surplus, if it fits one of these definitions, then it's considered exempt. And you'll see there it's size requirement, smaller than a certain size, if it's being exchanged for a property that's necessary for the agency use. Similar to what we just did with Central Park, if land's being transferred to another public entity, there's no need to comply with Surplus Land Act and a couple of others there. Next slide. Okay, so if we do determine that a property is surplus, then you have to go through this process. That's declaring the land surplus or exempt. If the land is declared surplus, you issue what's called a notice of availability. and it goes to a number of different agencies, including Housing and Financing Agency. And whomever you send it to, and anybody else, has 60 days to respond. You have, if you get a response, you have to negotiate in good faith for 90 days with any entity that does submit a qualified notice of interest. If you receive no notices of interest, then after the 60 days period elapsed, then you're allowed to proceed. However, if you do receive notice of interest, again, you have to have a good faith negotiation, and you are not required to go ahead and actually do a deal with anyone who submits something, a proposal, but you do have to negotiate in good faith. Next slide, April. We've kind of rolled through this pretty quickly. Here's an example of one, and I believe that this is the Santa Cruz Water Division building. And that's, I had a couple of these examples of things that potentially could come in. There are some exemptions that are likely would apply. And one that I wanted to point out, leasing space in the building, again, is exempt. If we were to sell the land in fee, then we would have to do a determination of whether it was surplus or not. It's possible that the special district exemption would apply, but that's something we'd probably want to verify with Housing and Community Development before doing. Next slide, April. Another property where this has come up recently is the Devil's Den property. And if we were to sell the entire property, it's likely would need to be declared surplus, and there would be a process to go through. Again, the negotiation period, it's 60 days to wait for someone to express interest. It's 90 days to negotiate. If you don't come to agreement, then you essentially send evidence that you've had a process and had good faith efforts on your part to Housing and Community Development. You get a notice of compliance. And then at that point, you're essentially done with the Surplus Land Act. There's not a time requirement, meaning that once it's designated surplus land and you've gone through the process, it doesn't expire after 2 or 3 or 4 years. You're allowed to proceed without having to comply with the act in the future. With Devil's Den, there's a number of potential different scenarios and things that have been discussed. If we were to sell the entire property, it's potentially surplus. If we were to lease property for our solar facility, which we've talked about, I think that would fit pretty squarely into one of the exemptions where it furthers the agency use. And also, as I mentioned, there is kind of that catch-all special district exemption, which allows you to sell and lease property for revenue generation purposes, but that would require us to kind of check in with Department of Housing and Community Development. Next slide, April. That might be it, actually. Okay. And I wanted to do just brief slides and not too much. And the purpose really of the presentation was just to let you know that this law has been updated. And it's going to start showing up in a lot more of our transactions, or potentially there'll be an analysis. There was a finding of exemption that was in the resolution for the Central Park lease today. And I wanted people to be aware of what it was, and also make you aware that we've been looking at it very closely and have kind of a list of types of property that it could apply to and what exceptions might apply to those. So Tom and I are also able to answer any questions if you're going through agenda packets and see something related to this. I think there's there's no specific requirements for personal property, which is non-real property. And we do have a policy in our policies and procedures that allows the general manager to dispose of personal property in certain types of real property, namely easements, up to a certain amount. And there's board approval required after that. And that was a policy that we amended probably 6 months ago with the board. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Again, this is more of an FYI item because it's starting to come up a little bit more, and we didn't want anyone to be surprised when they see it and have no background on it.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne, for your presentation. I don't have any public comment cards. Do we have any public comment online, April?
We do not.
Very good. We can open up to discussion amongst the board. Are there any questions or comments from the board? I don't. Director, Vice President Ozahosky.
Thank you for that presentation. So when we do sell surplus land, we must first send a written notice of availability to California Housing Finance Agency. and other qualifying entities. Would that include also park districts with jurisdiction over the area?
It may, Director Ozaski. Yeah, it may. And depending upon where the property is located and how it's zoned, it has some determination. The purpose of the act is to allow for land that's, you know, essentially be available for development and for housing. And there is some thought for park districts as well.
Do we have a list of these qualifying entities for our surplus lands?
Again, it will depend on the property that we're disposing of. And there is a list in the statute of some of them, but I'd have to look at it a little more closely to see, because there's a general description of others as well. It depends on the jurisdiction.
Okay.
But it's something that we would figure out if we're required to comply with that.
Understood. And that's easily accessible by you and your team, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Great presentation. Back to you, President Martin.
Very good. Any other questions or comments from the board? All right. Seeing none, we thank you, Mr. Byrne, for your presentation, but you're still in the batter's box as we're going to go to item 8, discussion of the Devil's Den Water District Board of Directors vacancy, and you are also the presenter tonight, Mr. Byrne.
Okay, I'm happy to also try and move this along pretty quickly. I'm happy to answer any questions as well. One of the unfortunate consequences of Director Gladbeck's very tragic passing is that it created a vacancy on the Devil's Den Water District Board of Directors. This item is essentially just to inform you of that vacancy and give you information as to how we're going to be proceeding. To give you some background, we did have a presentation on this recently. Devil's Den Water District is a California water district whose board's elected by owners of land within the district. So in order to qualify to be on the board of Devil's Den Water District, you have to either be a holder of title within the district or essentially be a representative, you could be a legal representative of a holder of title. Or in our case, you could be a representative that's designated by a holder of title within the district. This is not a type of district. It's landowner based upon the amount of land owned. It's not the type of district where anyone can run. I guess anyone can run who owns property within the district, but the voting is weighted based upon the amount of property that you own. As we've discussed in the past, and the transaction has been gone over recently for the benefit of the board, I don't think I need to do it again, but SCV Water owns approximately 90% of the land within Devil's Den Water District boundary. So as a result, when a vacancy has occurred in the past, SCV Water has recommended, essentially this is a process, certain representatives to the Devil's Den Water District Board for appointment, and the Devil's Den Water District Board has appointed those representatives. So the decision of who to have on the Devil's Den Water District Board is up to the members of the Devil's Den Water District Board. But SCV Water in the past, as the 90% owner of land, has recommended its representatives to the board, and the board has appointed them. The SCV Water Board of Directors were scheduled to consider who we will recommend to the Devil's Den Water District Board to be appointed at our August 16th board meeting. And there's also a board meeting that is scheduled for August 16th following the SCV Water Board District meeting, in which Devil's Den will make the decision. So SCV Water is going to consider whom to recommend, and then Devil's Den Water District would, with that information, decide whether they want to appoint that person or not. Okay, as required by law, similar to the process that we've been going through far too many times recently in our board, a notice of vacancy has been posted in the appropriate places. And in the notice of vacancy, there's a request for qualified people to who are interested in filling the vacancy to submit a written request for consideration to April by August 4th. In the past, SCV Water has appointed some of its existing board members. It's not a requirement that SCV Water recommends, it's not required that they be on the SCV Water board. That's how they've done in the past, but again, it's not the requirement. And again, the deadline, the process that we've set up is that if you'd like to be considered as a representative to submit something to April by August 4th, and then those names would then be submitted and made known to the board as part of the packet. And at the August 16th board meeting, the board would consider of those names whom they would want to recommend that Devil's Den Water District appoint to be the replacement director for former Vice President Gladbach or President Gladbach of Devil's Den Water District. I think that's it. I'm happy. You know, April, is there anything that I'm missing? I want to make sure that it's clear to folks, and I'm certainly happy to answer any questions as well. It is a bit of a unique entity, and there's been some discussion that I've had with individual members as well. Landowner-based district is quite different from the type of one-person, one-vote district that we have here in SCV Water. And again, as a 90% owner of property within that boundary, SCV Water has the ability to vote 90% of votes.
So we are not taking any action tonight. Is that correct, Mr. Barron?
That's correct. Yeah.
And just to add on to that real quick, it is August 4th by 4 p.m. Anything received after 4 p.m. wouldn't be considered.
Okay.
And I believe, April, that's been posted, well, I know it has, up in the Devil's Den Water District area. And then we also, in addition to that, have posted that on our website and here in Santa Clarita. So, which is, you know, more than what's required, but we're trying to be thorough.
That is correct. Director Cawley has his hand up.
Yes, but we do have a public comment card before we go to director questions and comments. Ms. Nultemeyer, would you like to come to the podium and make your public comment?
Yes, Devil's Den, we've been dealing with it for a long, long time. And I often wondered why you were bothering with it. But then, just looking at what went on this evening, I continue to ask why on a lot of things. But this is a piece of property that has no purpose for our water agency. It's out there and it's contaminated. I mean, it's not going to go anywhere. I can't understand that so much time is spent by this organization on things like this. Sell it. Do something. Get rid of it. That's what should have been done a long, long time ago. But for some reason, and I'm wondering why, this is being held on to. I've been out there a long, long time ago. And they can't put water into a BIDOC to get credit for it or anything else. And if you can come up now, any of you, all of you have been here a long time too, as to why there is any reason for keeping this property, why it shouldn't be just sold off for whoever would be foolish enough to buy it. But all we do is we keep putting money into it. Money, money, money. One has to wonder, there must be another reason. And maybe some of you can just explain why we've been doing it all these years. I've watched this for as long as we've been sitting out here and watching the water company once it was formed. And it was just another one of those strange things that has been costing a lot of money, but doesn't seem to serve any purpose whatsoever. And if you can come up with a decent answer, I would like to know what it is. Otherwise, make a decision tonight. Make a decision on what you're going to do with this property. And say, will you put it up for sale? Or are you going to keep pumping our taxpayers' money into it? And if you have an explanation why this is valuable to you, please state it now, clearly.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer. Your time is up.
If only it were on the agenda, I could answer that question. But that's not the item on the agenda tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. All right, Mr. Kyle, Director Kyle, you have your hands up.
Yeah, I just wanted a clarification. If someone does not apply, that does not preclude the board from recommending an individual. Past practice is for the board to recommend one of the directors, and if we kept with past practice, at our next meeting, we could appoint anyone, and specifically any director that's currently on our board. Is that not correct? They would not have to have applied.
Technically, that's correct, Director Culley. I know there's a process that I can let April speak to that has occurred in the past in which we have asked anyone who's interested, including directors, to provide a letter of interest or an email to April before a certain deadline so that we knew who wanted to be considered for that evening's vote. Obviously, that's a way to operate to try to create some clarity. And we've done that in the past. Technically, the board could decide how it would like to on the evening of. But maybe, April, you want to jump in on how you've done it in the past.
And it's just a quick email that says I'm interested. That's it. That's all I need from any director who's interested in being considered by the board. And then that goes out in the packet.
And I think one of the reasons for doing that as well, Director Colley, is, again, it's not required that you be a director. That has been the practice. And it might make for a confusing atmosphere if members of the public were indicating that they had wanted to be considered. And it's kind of helpful to have a time by which folks have to send something
out. Yeah, two comments I want to make. First, that the practice, I find it very, very, very unlikely that this board would deviate from the past practice of nominating a current director. I would hope we would not, and I can't imagine we would. And so it's a little unfortunate that we're going to go out publicly and ask people to go through some effort to apply for something which basically is a phantom opportunity. The opportunity doesn't really exist unless you're a director. And I also make a comment that I've been on the Devil's Den board of directors for a very long time. And I never remember, I'm pretty certain I did not provide any written document that says that I was interested. And I also, for the remaining directors, I will point out that being on the Devil's Den board provides an individual director no significant power, no extra money. It provides nothing that is of any real benefit to an individual director. Just wanted to make those points. Thanks.
Thank you, Director Colley.
Director Colley, just to add on to that, the requirements to be able to be on the Devil's Den Water District Board are very, very limited. So really, the only people that could be is somebody who's appointed by this board, whether it's any member of the public or it's somebody who's on the board. But normally we did receive just a quick little email or just a quick little note saying that you're interested, and that's all we need. It keeps, as Mr. Burns stated, it keeps the process going quickly.
And who am I to disagree with Director Colley, but when I was drafting the staff report for the next meeting, getting ahead of myself, the old staff report from CLWA said that Director Colley had submitted a written interest letter or email or something. So I've
Yeah,
you did, Director Collier. You did, yeah. I made to call you. Yeah, you did.
Somebody
it was very simple. Very simple.
Yeah, somebody needs to send that to me because I don't remember having done it. But again, I just think it's unfortunate that if we publish this in a way that would give a member of the public the idea that there's really an opportunity here, because there really effectively is not, I would think, that we will appoint from one of our current directors. Thanks.
Mr. Byrne, correct me if I'm incorrect, but we do have to follow the same process that we follow with any vacant position. So we did have to post it, but those requirements are listed on that vacancy notice. So anybody who sees it has, if they don't qualify for those very limited requirements, they can't apply. So it doesn't give anybody false hope. They just know if they aren't within those limits, they can't apply. But we do have to follow those requirements.
Yeah, we're required to post a notice of vacancy within the district boundaries, and put it on our website is, above and beyond that. But
Director Kelly, go ahead.
Well, one negative about being on Devil's Dentist, you have to file a Form 700. For some of the new members, I'm not sure if everybody knows who's currently on Devil's Den. So could we have that list of people that are currently on Devil's Den?
Vice President Ozahus.
Yeah, I have that list. It's Director Colley, Vice President Cooper of Devil's Den, Director Kelly, and Director DiPrimio. Back to you, President Martin.
All right. Any other questions or comments on Mr. Byrne's report? Very good. Seeing none, we can move on to finally the general manager is going to get a chance to update us on reports and activities. Mr. Stone, item 9.
Thank you very much. I do have a couple of items because we skipped the report a couple of times with longer meetings. First off, it is our practice to do two things when we have an emergency pipeline repair. A memo is prepared that's sent to the board president and allocate resources to.
Matt, we're not hearing you.
Repair
immediately. Mr. Stone, maybe if you turn off your video,
and then a little bit better. We typically have tried to read those in. Okay, please advise if this is better.
No, not really.
Okay. I would ask that Mr. Cole read the emergency repair notices. That's the primary focus of the general manager's report tonight. And I apologize. I'm in Seattle right now and attending to a family matter here that has me in a hotel room with not so great Wi-Fi, apparently. Or actually, no, per Chris's instructions, I'm not using the Wi-Fi, which is...
Mr. Stone.
Smart. Bad cell reception. Thank you.
Great. Yes, I can take over for Mr. Stone. What he was trying to say was that we have a policy that if there are emergency repairs in between the board meetings that exceed an authorization amount of the general manager, per our purchasing policy, he can make the determination to move forward with the repairs, as long as he reports those to the board at the next meeting. And so that was the purpose of these. We've had three of those, one on January 10th, approximately 3:30 p.m., an 8-inch section of main line started leaking in front of North Park Elementary School. The leak was isolated and were able to avoid disruption. However, approximately 33 homes in the school were out of water for approximately 5 hours. The main line was repaired and service restored at approximately 8 p.m. The second one was a section of 14-inch main line ruptured at the intersection of Steinbeck Avenue and the Old Road. That leak also was isolated, minimized customer service outages to only a few fire services, and the fire department was contacted as a precaution for fire watch. The main line was repaired and service was restored by approximately 4:30 a.m. on Friday, June 24th. And the third and final was, again, a 14-inch section of main line. This one was at Decoro Drive, just west of the intersection with Dickinson Drive. Again, that leak was isolated. That one, you may have seen some social media on. There was a driver, one vehicle that proceeded through the intersection and slipped into the sinkhole that was caused by the break. But according to the fire department, there were no injuries. Valencia High School was initially out of water. However, the school was not in session. Staff was shortly able to return service to the school, and staff worked on repairing the main line throughout the night and into the afternoon of July 16th. And that concludes reporting of those items.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Are there any public comments on Mr. Cole's report?
There is not.
Very good. Any questions or comments from the board? Seeing none, we can move on to item 10, committee meeting recap reports for informational purposes only. You have, and by the way, let me, before I state that, we are past the 9 o'clock optional quitting time. So I would ask the directors if they could possibly be brief in respect to our staff time and our public time and our time. So we do have three committee meeting reports in your packet, 10.1, 10.2, and 10.3. Are there any questions from board or any comments from the committee chairs? Very good. Seeing none, no public comment on item 10, April?
There is not.
Very good. We have item 11, written reports for informational purposes only. We do have five of those reports in your packet. Are there any questions or comments from the committee chairs or from the board? Director Armitage.
I just want to briefly mention that in the water resources and outreach section, the top 100 SCV friendly plant guide was mentioned. And I want to say a big thank you to the team who put that together. I think it's wonderful. And I especially appreciate the clear distinction and recognition of our water-friendly native plants. So thank you, team.
Very good. Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the board? Do we have any public comment on item 11?
We do not.
Very good. Move on to item 12, President's Report. Unless there's an objection, April, I'd like to just skip this, not skip it, but just say that you will provide the President's Report in your to each of the directors by email, and it'll be contained in the minutes. Is that correct?
Yeah, except for that very back part. If you could just do the very back end, the meetings I can do. But it would be good if you announced the very back part.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Maybe if you just announce the couple of announcements. You want me to read those really quick, those couple of announcements?
Yes.
Okay. Real quick, a couple of quick announcements. We will be removing the dividers at the board table this week. So all these dividers will be gone at the next board meeting. Also, the Aqua Region 8 program scheduled for August 12th will be moved, date pending. The Aqua 2022 Fall Conference will be held in Indian Wells November 29th through December 1st. Stay tuned for more updates on that. There will be a special meeting. Well, nope, there won't be now. I take that back. There will be a special board meeting facility tour on September 30th at 7:30 a.m. More information to come on that. We will be adjourning tonight's meeting in memory of SCV Water Guard Sally Hill, who passed away unexpectedly a few weeks ago. She was our guard at the gate for many, many years, very liked and respected by the SCV Water employees. She will be missed. And that's it.
Thank you, April. Any public comment on the report?
No.
Very good. We move on to item 13, AB 1234 reports. There are a couple of AB 1234 reports in your packet.
Does anyone have a oral? Director Cooper.
Yes, just very quickly, I attended the Aqua Groundwater Committee meeting on the 26th, the Water Quality Committee meeting on the 27th. I attended up in Sacramento Aqua Board Workshop on the 28th, and then the Aqua Board meeting in Sacramento on the 29th. And I will have a couple of items in director reports when you're ready for those.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Any other AB 1234 reports? Director Kelly.
I attended the Congressman Mike Garcia's event at the El Trocadero.
Okay, thank you. Director Armitage.
Thank you. I also attended the Aqua Water Quality Committee meeting virtually on July 27th. I just wanted to share a few highlights really quickly. Well, I'll just share one thing that I thought was interesting, that the Water Research Foundation will be releasing an RFP in mid-August for a project related to help quantify microplastics in various stages of the water treatment and distribution process. And they were asking that if agencies were interested in participating in sample collection and analysis for the project, that people should reach out to them. So I just wanted to mention that in case there's any interest on behalf of the agency. And in the interest of time, I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Any other AB 1234 reports from our board? Seeing none, do we have any public comment on the AB 1234 reports?
We do not.
Very good. Item 14, director reports. I know we have at least one over here. Director Cooper.
Yes, just some things coming back from the Aqua board meeting. One is Aqua is starting a 501c3 charitable organization to foundation to deal with diversity, equity, and inclusion. We'll have voted to go ahead and start that process. It's going to take a little while to get it in up and running, but it's an opportunity for companies, not necessarily water agencies, but companies that we deal with to contribute to helping to promote DEI issues in the water industry and in working in women in water. So that's going to be moving forward. A couple of bills to be aware of, AB 1817, PFAS bill applies to new clothing, so you can't have Gore-Tex type clothing using PFAS. But the trend is California is not outlawing PFAS completely, as they're doing it kind of item by item. You know, they did it with firefighting foam. They're going to do it in clothing. They're going to do it, apparently, depending on how strong the lobbyists are. In Sacramento. There's AB 2247, a PFAS disclosure bill. Manufacturers will have to register their products that contain PFAS in them. There's AB 2787 to ban intentionally added microplastics. Not sure exactly what products would have intentionally microplastics put into them, but apparently they do.
Shampoo, for one.
Shampoo does?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. SB 1124 is going to be a new public health goal for manganese. Manganese has always been a secondary, and now it's going to have a public health goal. And we can look forward to it'll have an MCL in the not-too-distant future. One item that I really wanted to bring back, guy from Chico, Eric Larrabee, was, you know, they've had the fires in Northern California, and he was out on the airstrip watching them load the fire retardant into the planes. And he said all of a sudden he noticed that the big tanks that the stuff was coming out of, it said PFOS on the side of the tank. And so he started looking at and asking the firefighting, this is a federal firefighting service, is there PFAS in fire retardant? And firefighters say, we don't know. You know, it's whatever they put in the tank, that's what we use. Well, apparently there's about 10 or more different firefighting retardants, this the orange stuff or red or whatever it is that they drop on fires, California had outlawed firefighting foam having PFAS in it. Well, this isn't foam. That foam is at airports and that's firefighting foam for airplanes. Well, PFAS apparently is in some of the products that's used in fire retardant. He tried to get the MSDSs on sheets on all of those and couldn't get them because some of the firefighting retardant is a private, what do you call it? Proprietary. And he couldn't get the contents of it. Well, after I heard him, I thought, maybe this is what we've seen. We haven't been able to figure out where PFAS has come from in our valley, but we've had fires many times in the valley, and they've firefighting retardant dropped all over the valley. And so maybe that's one area where it's coming from. So they're going to start looking at trying to find out what's in this firefighting retardant and see if it carries if all of them carry PFAS or not, and see if we can get some of those outlawed, because that may be where some of ours is coming from in our area. Just one I thought would be interesting to bring back. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Any other AB 1234? Or no, director reports, I'm sorry. Director Armitage.
Just briefly, I don't know if Mr. Campbell, has he officially left the agency? Has he officially retired, Mr. Campbell? He has, okay. Oh, I just wanted to wish him a thank you, or a good retirement, and thank him for all the work that he's done for the agency. And then extend a big congratulations to Ms. Patterson for being promoted into the role of Director of Finance and Administration. So thank you. Thank you for taking that on. There was talk earlier about the emergency response crews that show up to the big main breaks and stay there till 4:30 in the morning working. So I just wanted to extend a big thank you to those crews as well. If you could pass that on, please. I'm sure it's not fun working at 2:30, 3:30, 4:30 in the morning on those. So thank you to them, and we appreciate everything they do.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Any other director reports? Seeing none, any public comment, April, on director reports?
There is not.
Very good. Item 15 and 16 have been pulled in accordance with the earlier provision. We have now Director
I had a question for Director Cooper on his report.
Yeah,
Director Cooper? Yeah. I was wondering if you could send us an or somehow if we could get the information on all those bills that you mentioned. I'd love to look them up and all that. Okay, great. Thank you. I'd really appreciate it.
Round it off. Okay, so we're back to item 15 and 16 were pulled. That was closed session and closed session announcements. So we can move on to item 17, director request for approval for event attendance. Do we have any requests? Director Ozahosky.
Okay, if I can make it, we'd like to attend AQUA's California Water Data Summit in Irvine, California for August 17th, 18th. April, I'll send you the details tomorrow. It is an AQUA event. It deals with GoldSim and how we how what agencies deal with mass amounts of data.
Okay. Do we have to vote on this, Mr. Byrne, or can I just approve it?
If it's an AQUA event, it's already approved in our policies and procedures manual, so there's no approval.
Okay, very good. It's on the pre-approved list.
Yeah.
Very good. Any other requests for event attendance? Seeing none, we are now at on item 18, and as April mentioned earlier, we will be adjourning the meeting in memory of Sally Hill, SCD Water Agency Yard. And if you have come through the gate, and probably more likely during the day, you saw a very cheerful lady in the booth waving you through, saying,
giving you pleasantries of the day, very friendly, very nice, very personable, and a very good worker. It's so sad to hear the her passing in that automobile. Actually, it wasn't an accident. She died of a medical condition that caused the accident, I think. But nonetheless, it's sad to see her go, and we will be adjourning the meeting in her memory. With that, we are adjourned.